scratch about.
You gotta put it in perspective.
Well, a big hetero hello to all of you. You buying this? Anybody? Yes? No?
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
We have an amazing relationship. We both have so much in common. We both love soup. And we love the outdoors. We love snow peas. And talking and not talking. We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
And now,
are you ready to get to work?
Excuse me?
It's Monday morning, Peggy. Brand new week. Full speed ahead.
Our feature presentation.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday, the 10th of August.
9th.
Hang on.
10th.
10th?
10th.
10th.
Suck
wow.
it!
Wow. Suck it indeed.
I picked up my pencil to erase it immediately because I just assumed I was wrong.
I was wrong. Right. I'm so sorry.
10th of August.
Wow.
Yeah.
That changes everything.
Don't doubt me, man.
Right?
No.
Rarely.
New and improved Kevin.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm just used to whatever day it is, Kevin say the wrong day. So I just automatically assume if he says it's the 10th, it must be either the 9th or the 11th.
And you're right most of the time.
We got that settled. Yeah. How was everybody's weekend?
Real good.
Good. Thank you. You?
It's fine.
Just dance battles all weekend like you do?
Like I do. Had to go to a 70-year-old's birthday party.
Oh. What do they do at a 70-year-old birthday party?
Complain. Pretty much. Wish for sweet death, essentially. So I had that going on.
Family or friends? Family. It has to be.
Family. Yeah. It was family, yeah. Yeah, because friends, I would... Friends I'd be able to get out of.
And now he wouldn't go to a birthday party. Oh. Of anybody that's not, he didn't have to.
Good point.
That I didn't have to, yes. Yeah. It was a whole weekend of events, and I managed to get out of most of it. But the thing yesterday I could not get out of, and that's because I have a wife. You know how that works. Compromise. Sucks. And then last night I had to complete the final hour and a half of my 8 hours of True Detective torture. I had to survive that.
Oh, I haven't completely caught up yet.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you should really look forward to that. It's great.
Wow.
You'll enjoy it. It's
Do you
a
hate
lot
it?
Of fun. Everybody hates
everybody
it, Kevin.
Hates it.
Well, everybody hates
why
it.
Why do you keep watching?
I'm not hate watching, as some are. I'm watching because there were flashes of entertainment throughout the program, and then you think, well, they're going to bring it in for a nice solid landing. You know what I mean? This is where all the pieces are going to come together, and it's going to be great.
Right.
But it was just – it went out with a colossal whimper. Have you been watching, Allie?
No, I like to wait right when a show is on the cusp of being canceled, and then I'll totally watch. I'll
then
watch like four
in.
Or five seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I'm sure there are some people who liked it, but it underwhelmed this reviewer. That's for sure. So it was so that was an hour and a half of last night. It was a long 8 hours, man. It's a long 8 hours. So I had that.
All right. Good.
Why is everybody laughing?
I don't know. It's just weird. It's just odd to me that you would watch it, and it seems like you don't enjoy it at all.
Well, you get invested in a show. You want to see how it ends, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's pretty normal. I think we've all been there. Look, we all survived Lost together. We know what it's like. You fall in love with some characters, and you're intrigued by some plot lines, and you want to see how it all wraps up or doesn't. You want to see all that?
Oh, no. This is a colossal disaster.
Well, let's see what Ralph has to say, because he's been a true detective fan as well. It could just be, and this is extremely likely, that I'm just dumb and that I am just a guy who, you know, isn't tracking with some of the plot points. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe smarter people than I got a lot more out of it than I did. So
it was trending highly on Twitter.
Was it?
Yeah, nationwide as a colossal disaster, as Bean likes to say. Yeah. So, not good.
Hey, here's a story to get us started. We do have an excellent Kevin and Bean show today. Don't judge it by this segment. This one kind of, I don't know what to think about this. I'll be curious to hear your opinion. A 13-year-old girl named Sage and her mother, Sandy Siebold. They live in Oklahoma. They lost the man of the family back in May. He died of pancreatic cancer. He was only 43 years old. So teenage daughter loses her father. Her mother loses her husband. And when Father's Day came around not long ago, they decided to visit his gravesite and leave a note on the grave.
Guilty.
With a balloon. Guilty of...
Oh, I thought we were ruling right now. No?
No.
All right.
So they went to the grave. I don't know why this story just came out this week, but this happened back in June on Father's Day. So they went and they left a note on the gravesite, attached to a balloon, by the way. And the note said, "This is our 13-year-old girl's first Father's Day without her dad. He passed away on May 13th from pancreatic cancer. If you receive this, please make her day by sending a response telling her who you are and where you are from. Thank you in advance." So they leave that at the gravesite.
Okay.
On a balloon, like they do. And then they left. And then they drove home 25 miles later to Clement in Oklahoma. And you could probably see where the story is headed.
Not even a little bit.
No.
Later that day, when little Sage is out in the backyard, the note arrives and lands on her fence. In their house, at their property, 25 miles away from where the cemetery is.
What?
The same day that they left it. So the balloon followed them home, essentially, and ended up in their backyard.
How is that possible? Isn't that – aren't the odds astronomical against that?
Of course. Okay. The odds are astronomical about it ending up in any single one location. I mean, the odds would be just as astronomical as it ending up in somebody else's house. But the fact that it was theirs, they look at as a sign that their dad was sending them a message and that he's okay.
Wow.
All right. That's one interpretation. Okay, good.
What's yours?
What would yours be?
No.
Just that it's completely random?
I just think it's not him. Yeah. Yeah, it's completely random.
You are soulless.
Wait, you guys think it was him?
Yes.
I don't.
I don't think it was him. Brought that back to her house. Something.
I also
in
can't
the
understand in a million years how this could happen. It's too freaky. It's too freaky.
Interesting. I wonder if somebody in the family did it to try and like say, oh yeah, this is a message. Maybe they did it.
Oh you sound British.
They were the only two that went to the gravesite together. Huh. So there wasn't anybody there, and they saw it fly away into the air. So I don't know how that family member or friend would catch it in the air and then drive it over to their house and put it on their fence.
Bean, what do you think it is?
I think it is an unbelievable coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Crazy weird luck.
But I'm glad that it gives this family some sense of closure, some sort of feeling that that they were heard and that they're missed and that they're loved and that he's still on the other side. There's no harm in them believing that.
Oh, I agree with that.
I'm fine with them believing that. But bizarre, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happened.
I like it.
But at least that man never had to see True Detective Season 2.
That's the takeaway.
All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
I believe that the harder you work, the more you put into it, you're more likely to get out of it, right?
It's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Simon Pegg's on the program today.
Yeah.
Talking Mission Impossible. We also have comedian Maz Jobroni in the studio. Mm-hmm. We have Harvey Levin from TMZ, as we do on Mondays. We have kids that are too smart for their own good. A 12-year-old, smarter, higher IQ than Stephen Hawking. Is that good?
Wow.
Do you want that?
I don't think so. Ugh. I prefer to be dumb.
You're so good at it, though. It's a lot more fun. Yeah.
Because everything's a surprise and it's all new. It's so much better. We're going to talk to Kevin Farley, the brother of Chris Farley, about the movie I Am Chris Farley. And Allie is in love with Fozzie Bear. So that's coming up today as well on the Kevin and Bean Show. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beatnik. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:52.
Here he is. The return of the Mac, ladies and gentlemen. You know him, you love him, you couldn't live without him, but he's back. Ralph Garman.
Hello, hey, boys, Ralph. Girls.
What's going on, man?
It is a Monday morning here. on the Showbiz Beat. That means we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office.
How about a little chit-chat? How about a little how are you?
I was told I had to get done early.
No, you're fine.
Why did I have to come in early?
Because if you started after another song, then we were going to be crunched. But now we've got some time to say hey and welcome back and how was your week?
But I'm
and
still we getting you. Out of the top of the hour, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm confused. I'm starting off my Monday confused. That's what's okay. happening to me. But we take a look at the box office each and every Monday morning. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation in its second week. Still number one at the box office. $29.4 million made it number one. Then Fantastic Four was anything but fantastic at the box office. $26.2 million. And its debut was far short of what the studio was hoping for and anticipated. Only $26 million. I know it sounds like a lot of money, but when your movie costs, I don't know, close to $100 million.
That's not so much then?
You kind of need to make your money back.
Ralph, why is that franchise over at Fox and all the others over at Disney and they don't know how to handle these kinds of movies?
Well, it's a long story, but back in the day, I guess the late 90s, Marvel was in bankruptcy. And so in order to stay solvent, they sold off the cinematic rights to a few of its major characters before they started making their own films with Marvel Studios. Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and the X-Men were all sold to Fox as Fox properties. And Fox has had a different level of success with those properties than Marvel proper has. Just because Marvel, as you can imagine, very connected to the product and very connected and dedicated to the source material. And they seem to have a better grasp on how to translate those stories to the screen versus Fox, which had enormous success with the Spider-Man franchise initially with Sam Raimi's version with Tobey Maguire. And then has had off and on again success with the X-Men franchise. But Fantastic Four, they
just can't get their head around it.
They just haven't cracked the code, which is just to leave it the F alone, first of all. If they just took a comic book and they said, okay, let's just film this. And they took that and
that would work.
Use that as a script and then just do that. They would be fine.
They just monkey around with it too.
Everybody
much.
Wants to put their own stink on it and make it, oh, this is going to be unlike anything. Listen, shut up. They got one guy who stretches like a rubber band. The other guy's made of rocks. The other guy catches on fire and the other girl is, she's invisible. You're not going to make this grim. You're not going to make this gritty. They're just four goofy people with cool powers. Just right. do that.
Marvel ever calls over there and goes, hey, we'll give that a run.
Well, they would love to. They would love to, trust me. But Fox keeps making these movies because that's how they hold on to, because of the legality of the deal. If they keep making films, they retain the rights to make those films.
Ah.
Now, with Spider-Man, they did come to an agreement with Marvel, and Spider-Man is going to be able to cross over from universe to universe. Marvel will be able to use that character in their films, but Fox will also be able to make their own standalone Spider-Man movies. They've come to some sort of deal. But maybe they'll do the same with the Fantastic Four.
Well, this one is apparently just terrible, this Fantastic Four, though.
That is the word on the street. I was initially very enthralled by what I saw with the trailers and with the cast. The great young cast. I mean, Miles Teller and The Miles Man, as he's known. And Kate Mara and Michael B. Jordan. But it apparently did not turn out as well as expected. You know, the director himself tweeted, this isn't my movie.
He did?
Yeah, Josh Trank, the director of the film, tweeted the day after release and said, a year ago I had a great version of this movie, but this is not the version that I put together. I guess that's reality.
So they took it from him and edited it differently?
That's what everyone is extrapolating from his tweet.
Wow.
Which quickly disappeared after he put it up, by the way. But it seems as if he is distancing himself, saying, hey, it's not my bad. If you had seen the version I wanted to make, it would be a much better film.
That's what I tell people about this show when they tune in and they listen. Yes. It's like, oh, man, if you'd have heard it before it was edited, though, it was terrific.
Right. originally, it was a very troubled shoot and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of grumblings about bad news on that set, so it wasn't a recipe for success, really, from the outset. So, sad news.
Gotcha.
The Gift, however, did pretty well in its opening weekend. $12 million made it number three at the box office. Vacation and Ant-Man were the top five. Minions, Ricky and the Flash, Trainwreck, Pixels, and Southpaw were the rest of your top 10 movies at the box office this week. And sad news over the weekend. Legendary broadcaster, one of the original booth guys from Monday Night Football from 1971 to 1997 with alongside Howard Cosell and Don Meredith. Frank Gifford has passed away. Legendary sports broadcaster, 84 years old. He passed away yesterday. He also was a former New York Giant football player, and that's why nobody cares that he's dead. Well, it's true. No, it's everybody hates the Giants.
Did you check with everybody on
yes,
that?
Yes, I made calls this morning.
Wow, it's to everybody. Wow.
I'm exhausted. Is my dialing fingers sore? You think he's happy to be away from Kathy Williams?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Kidding?
Right.
It's worth
he's been
it.
Praying
it's
for
worth,
death for
it's
years.
It's worth the trade-off. Wherever he is right now, he's like, yeah, look, I know. All things considered, still better off. That's what Frank's saying.
I feel like we never saw him again after that cheating scandal like 10 years ago, whatever
remember?
It was. It just seemed like she kept him locked up at home after that.
Yeah. He had the stewardess. Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. He was like 100 when he was doing that. Good for you, Frank. Legendary. By the way, do yourself a favor. Look up the picture, photograph. Frank Gifford, Chuck Bednarik. Look up that picture. It's known as the hit in football.
Is that the hit?
History.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Chuck Bednarik from the Philadelphia Eagles just laid out, knocked unconscious Frank Gifford, and he's standing over him going, yeah, like celebrating over his lifeless corpse on the field.
And didn't Gifford not play for like 2 years after that?
I mean, 25 years. He was off
took
25
him out of the
years.
Game.
Really? 25?
Yeah. Then he came back.
He came back.
Which was a bad decision. His barker said he was like 60.
That was ill-advised.
It was ill-advised.
One play.
Today's celebrity birthday is Rosanna Arquette's 56. Antonio Banderas is 55. Justin Theroux, newlywed Justin Theroux, 44 years old today, married Jennifer Aniston in a surprise wedding. Surprise!
That was sweet not to have to hear about it for 18 months straight.
Yep. Angie
but Hart. Now the tabloids, Kevin, are all going to be about when they'll break up.
Yeah, I guess.
Trouble in Paradise. That's going to be the new Aniston headline.
Angie Harmon's 43. She's married to Jason Sehorn, by the way. Former New York Giant. That's why nobody cares it's her birthday. Devin Ayo, I'm just getting ready for the season.
This is my preseason.
I have to stretch. I have to get in football shape.
I like it.
I have to warm up. Devin Aoki, 33 years old today, and reality star Kylie Jenner turns 18. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Monday morning, about this time every week, we talk to our good friend Harvey Levin in the newsroom at TMZ.com. Hey, Harvey, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, guys. Good morning.
I had not heard of this apparently hot restaurant or club called The Nice Guy on La Cienega. Apparently they had quite the to-do last night.
Yeah, this is, you know, I kind of want to back up. We're talking Kylie, right?
Yes, Kylie Jenner.
Right. And yeah, they had a big party. You know what? I'll do it. I'll tell it your way, and then I'll back into this thing, because this is a great story.
Okay.
So, a huge party. It's her 18th birthday. Everybody shows up except Rob, and you know, Caitlin's there. The girls are there. Kim. Everybody's there. And Tyga presents her at the end of the evening with this really amazing $260,000 Ferrari with a blue bow on it. I mean, it's pretty sick. Okay.
An 18-year-old now has a $250,000 Ferrari.
She may have two cars. Because
she may have two.
Well, get this. This is just, I love this story. It's so hilarious. On Friday night, they had a family dinner with Chris and Caitlin and Kim and Kylie and Chloe at Nobu in Malibu. So Kylie drives up in a red G-Wagon, a Mercedes G-Wagon. It's a 2013 cherry red. So we actually got a picture of Tyga picking it up at a shop on earlier in the day. So that's cool.
Okay.
Then we find out that G-Wagon was actually a different color a week ago, and that G-Wagon was being used by Tyga's baby mama, Black China. He had given this to her a year and a half ago. And all of a sudden, he told her, I want this thing back. I want this thing back. I want it back. Get your own car. So he takes it back about a week and a half ago, gets it repainted red, gives it to, and Kylie shows up in it Friday night, and we check it out, and we realize the license plates are exactly the same in the two cars. We
what?
Find out,
oops.
It's so,
so
Tyga gives his current girlfriend a used car that he had previously given his ex-girlfriend.
Okay, that's the way we saw it for sure.
Okay.
So the next day, one of the Kardashian sources insists this was not a gift. She just happened to be driving it, which is kind of weird because she has other cars, including a G-Wagon. So, and plus her favorite color is red, apparently. So, anyway, they're saying, no, this was never designed to be her car. But it's in her driveway, by the way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but it's just such a funny story.
So this story comes out Friday, and then all of a sudden, last night, she gets a Ferrari from him.
Well, and look, if what we're all thinking is true, this was an expensive misstep for him, wasn't it?
No kidding.
Wow. How about that? Busted.
I don't know, but I just think it's hilarious. I mean, honestly, I don't personally understand it. It's like, I don't care who was driving the car before, but apparently it matters.
Right, but I would think it matters to her if she knew that it was his baby mama's.
A hand-me-down.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, exactly. I repainted it for you.
They do not get along, and they've been feuding for a year now. So I don't know what Tyga was
thinking. Good times.
This Kylie, by the way, and I know we're going to move on here, but I mean, at least Kendall has a job, right? She's a model. Kylie is just a teenager with an Instagram account. That's it. And she's being showered with all of these cars and all of these riches, right?
Yeah, but you know, to me, she's kind of going the route of Kim.
Yes.
And
now that she's 18, she may really be going the route of Kim.
I don't know, but let's put it this way. It certainly worked out for Kim.
Yeah. It certainly did.
That's true.
All right. Let's move on to another topic that we are excited to talk to you about, Harvey, because every once in a while on this show, we talk about process serving. Now, you're an attorney. You've been involved in lots of cases over the years. Do you love the idea of process serving by surprise? Because we do.
It's really one of the most entertaining things about the law business, and honestly the different ways, like you talk to process servers and you say give me your best story, and they're all great
because they have to figure out a way to get the person to take it, right? That's the key, is that you have to hand
you don't
them.
Have to touch it though, right? You just have to present it in front of them, right, Harvey?
Oh, you're going to now give away the story. You want me to tell the story?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
Yeah, tell the story.
Okay, so Justin Bieber's in Laguna Beach over the weekend, and this guy comes up with a really cute puppy. And so Justin kind of leans down because he sees this puppy, and he starts petting the puppy, and the guy kind of lunges and says, "I'm an attorney. I'm serving you. You've been served." And Justin lunges back and says, "I never touched it. I never touched it," and walks away. And so this is, look, here, there's bad news and good news for Justin Bieber.
Right.
The bad news is you're right, that you don't have to touch it. You have to present it to the person in front of them, and that's considered valid process. So Justin was served. The good news for Justin is the lawsuit's ridiculous. This is a lawsuit involving, I want to say Meek Mill. Do I have it right? I'm not looking.
Meek Mill's.
Yes, it is Meek Mill. Yes, that's right.
Okay. So Meek Mill rented this crazy glass house in Beverly Hills that Justin had actually rented previously, and he rented it for like 4 days, and it was right before Grammy weekend. And the landlord says that the place was destroyed, and he says there were like $50,000 in damage, and Meek Mill isn't paying, so the guy is suing Meek Mill. So what the guy has decided to do, the landlord, is since Meek Mill hasn't paid, he's decided, he says, look, I only allowed him to have 6 people in this house, and anybody else, as far as I'm concerned, is a trespasser. So he's suing Justin and every other celebrity that was there, calling them trespassers, which is ridiculous because they were invited guests. They're not trespassers. So there's no case there. And I think he's doing it just to put the squeeze on Meek Mill to pay the money. But Justin will not have any problem with this lawsuit, but he got tricked by a cute puppy.
That is very funny. Harvey, have you used process servers in any of your cases, too? Have they ever had to go to extraordinary lengths to get paperwork in front of somebody?
I don't have a good process server story, because when I practiced, I did all business litigation, and they were all so damn boring, they just accepted it.
Kevin, right. didn't we get served here at K-Rock one day? Didn't somebody show up and serve us papers?
Yeah, I can't remember how they did it, though.
I think they just... Yeah.
I'll tell you one quick great story.
Yes.
At least I love this. When we started People's Court a long, long, long time ago, this was when the show was only on the air for, a month or so. And I used to go to Judge Wapner's house, and we'd go over the cases, you know, before the actual taping. And we just kind of like, you know, I'd get some notes together, and we'd kind of go over each one. So we're sitting in his backyard going over the cases, and the doorbell rings. So Wapner gets up, goes over to the door, and he's away from me, and he's gone for like 2 or 3 minutes. He comes back, and he's kind of smiling, and he has a piece of paper in his hand, and he says, "I just got served with a lawsuit," and it was some arbitration thing that where he was presiding over. He said, "I just got served," and I said, "Why are you smiling?" And he said, "The guy asked for my autograph."
Oh, that's pretty sweet. That's pretty sweet. Thank you. You've been served.
All right, TMZ.com is, it should just be your homepage at this point, frankly, and you can check them out on Fox TV for TMZ and TMZ Live, and, of course, TMZ Hollywood Sports airs Monday through Friday on the Reels channel. Harvey, have a great week. Thanks for the time, sir. We enjoyed it.
You too, guys. We'll see you.
I was thinking about this this Donald Trump experiment that's going on right now, and I'm so in love with it right now. You know what it reminds me of? Remember when Sacha Baron Cohen was going around to impress as Borat?
Yeah.
Every time he would show up for an interview or for a red carpet to prank somebody or put them in an embarrassing situation, you would just love it because it was so brilliant. I think Donald Trump is every bit as good as Sacha Baron Cohen at this character that he's playing, this guy who's pretending to run for president.
You think he's trolling? He's trolling the Republican
he's
Party?
He's trolling. Yeah, he's just punking everybody. He's just like, I'm going to go out and watch the crazy things I'm going to say and what a firestorm it's going to cause. He's at home laughing right now at how seriously everybody is taking him. I mean, that's the only possible explanation I can come up with for what he's doing. But God, is it working or is it working?
I'm going to say working.
He was at that debate the other night, and he basically just said everything that a politician would advise a person not to say who wanted to be elected. Yet he continues to lead by double digits. So he got in a little bit of hot water with some people for that contentious back and forth he had with Megyn Kelly, who was one of the Fox moderators. And then yesterday he was making the rounds on the Sunday morning talk shows on Meet the Press and Face the Nation and shows like that. Here's a report about how he wasn't exactly apologizing for that fight with Megyn Kelly.
Donald Trump phoning in to political talk shows, refusing to back away from his controversial comments about Fox debate moderator Megyn Kelly.
I apologize when I'm wrong, but I haven't been wrong. I mean, I said nothing wrong.
Trump insists he was not implying the news anchor was hormonal when he said this.
You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Some opponents aren't buying it.
The point is, women understood that comment, and yes, it is offensive.
Trump still dominating the conversation and the polls.
Maybe I shouldn't change. I'm leading by double digits.
I got to tell you, that makes perfect sense.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States of America, the great Donald J. Trump, joins us back on the Kevin Devine Show on K-Rock. Hey, Mr. Trump, how are you?
I think that music sounds pretty good, don't you?
I think it's very appropriate for you, sir. The way you're going, you can't miss but be the next president.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your support. Shows you're not stupid.
So, Donald, would you clarify for us, please, just for those who still are mad at you about the remarks you made about Megyn Kelly? When you were referring to blood coming out of wherever, you say it was not hormonal. You were not making any reference to her woman.
No, of course not. You'd have to be sick to come up with that.
Okay.
Anyone who thinks that is sick.
So what were you trying to say?
I meant there was blood coming out of her eyes when she was asking me that question, mm-hmm. or there was blood coming out of her nose.
Why didn't you say nose?
Because sometimes that's a hard word to come up with.
But you could see
I'm not a doctor, okay? I don't know all the ins and outs of the human body.
Right, but Mr. Trump, with all due respect, sir, you could see that there wasn't blood coming out of her nose at the debates.
Well, it was just a metaphor. There wasn't actual blood coming out of her eyes either.
Uh-huh.
But I meant that she just had blood. She was out for blood.
She was out for blood. That's what you're now saying.
Something completely different.
So she had blood in her eyes, mm-hmm. blood out of her, you know, whatever.
So we just misunderstood.
Yes, of course you did.
All right,
if you think that I meant something other than that, then you have your head up your whatever. By that I mean nose.
Right. You also said on one of the talk shows yesterday, I cherish women. I want to help women. I'm going to do things for women that no other candidate is going to do. Could you expand upon that, please?
Yes, I love women.
Right.
I've always loved women,
mm-hmm.
and I adore them.
Right.
And anyone who knows anything about me knows that I love women.
Right.
And I've loved many women.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever seen my daughter? She's so hot.
Yes. She is attractive. That's inappropriate for you to say, but yes, she's a very attractive young lady.
Yeah, you've said that before. On The View, you said if you could, you would have dated your daughter.
Oh, if I wasn't her father, I'd be all over that.
That's creepy, weird. Though. Donald, you can't talk like that about your kid.
Well, I think I can because I'm at the lead by double digits. So apparently I can talk like that. And you're stupid.
Why am I stupid? Because I'm saying don't creep on your daughter.
Because you're a loser. And so you don't have a hot daughter, so you're jealous of me. And that's why there's blood coming out of your whatever.
Are you saying there's blood coming out of Bean's whatever?
Yes.
And is that his nose?
No, I mean his vagina.
Okay. Oh. 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 6:51.
Sometimes there's an actor who you like so much that you see he's in a movie and you go, I'm going to that movie. Simon Pegg is one of those guys.
Agreed.
Even if the movie's not great, he's always great and worth watching. And of course,
Sure, you're going to go into Kevin James chunk there. But look, everyone's got their own taste. Whatever.
He's such a clean piece of glass, though, Ralph.
Simon Pegg. He chases Pac-Man.
Simon is one of the co-stars of America's number one film, Mission Impossible: Rogue Nation. He'll be joining us on the Kevin and Bean Show just after 7. First, though, ladies and gentlemen, return of Ralph Garman with the Showbiz Beat here on a Monday morning. Hey, Ralph.
Hey, boys and girls. Before I get into the show business news, I want to talk about an opportunity to meet a legend. You don't have this opportunity very often in life. Tonight is one of those opportunities. You may have heard us from time to time refer to our security guard here at the studios of the world-famous KROQ FM, Charles Connor. Charles Connor is not only one of the best people I know, but he keeps us safe here at K-Rock with that howitzer he's got.
He doesn't really have
He's got a howitzer, Kevin.
I haven't seen that.
Behind those sandbags, he has got weaponry.
Okay, all right.
Keep us safe. But before he slummed it with us here at K-Rock, he was, nothing, just one of the drummers that invented rock and roll. That's all.
Just told me that?
That's all. He was a drummer with many legendary acts over the years. Of course, Little Richard. You know Little Richard.
Sure.
James Brown, Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson. You know, little names like that. Big Joe Turner. Nobody's. He is a legendary drummer, and he has written his autobiography called Keep a Knockin', The Story of a Legendary Drummer. Charles Connor will be at Book Soup tonight on Sunset Boulevard. That's 8818 Sunset Boulevard at Book Soup at 7 p.m. He will be there with his book, signing copies of the book. Charles is one of the best, and he's got great stories, and he is one of the great drummers of all time. There's a little taste of Charles Connor's drumming. This is from Keep a Knockin', the legendary song by Little Richard. And this is his signature sort of drum intro to that song. But he pretty much invents rock and roll drumming with this song. Here's a little taste. You want to throw your mittens around your kittens and go, go, go.
That's what I'm talking about, sucker.
That's right. Come on, boys and girls. Doesn't that just make you just want to rock? Just go down to the drive-in and just get together with Fonzie and Richie and Potsy. So if you'd like to meet Charles and pick up his book, that's tonight at Book Soup at 7 p.m. there on Sunset Boulevard. I wanted to give him a shout-out because...
Let's all keep it funky now.
It's got to keep it funky.
That's right.
It's Monday morning. It means we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, once again, number one for a second week. $29.4 million made it so. Fantastic Four, a disappointing $26.2 million, but that was good enough to make it number two. I misspoke earlier in the Showbiz Beat when we were talking about... the Fantastic Four franchise and why it struggles over there at Fox. And I mentioned that Marvel had sold off the film rights to other studios, some of their major characters, Fantastic Four and X-Men.
Right.
At Fox. Sony Pictures was the studio that developed Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Successfully with Sam Raimi. And so I misspoke there when I said they were all part of Fox. They were not. But wanted to correct that. $26.2 million, as I mentioned, a disappointing opening for the Fantastic Four. The Gift... $12 million at number three. Vacation and Ant-Man were number four and five. Minions, Ricky and the Flash at number seven. Trainwreck, number eight. Pixels, number nine. And Southpaw, number ten. you know the song Walking on Sunshine? Familiar with the song Walking on Sunshine?
Yeah, sure. Peppy little number.
Peppy little number. Can we play a little of that Walking on Sunshine?
Connor on the drums right there.
I can never remember the lyrics to that song. Kidding. It was a big hit in 1985, I want to say, to a band called Katrina and the Waves. But the thing is, that song has been in so many movies and TV shows and commercials over the years that BMG, this is an amazing story, just paid $15.4 million for it.
Just
for the rights to that song.
Recently?
This week.
$15 million?
$15.4 million for one song. Now, admittedly, they do get the rest of the band's song catalog. All the Katrina and the Waves hits now belong to them. But basically, that's why they spent that money, was for that one song, because it gets still, it's so, in such high demand for movies, TV shows, and commercials.
Wow. That's a crazy amount of money.
For one song, it sure is.
It is. It's fascinating. I was as intrigued as you, Ralph, about that story, because here's a song that you sit down and write 30 years ago, and it's still bringing in over $1 million a year in royalties from the ways that you mentioned. It's crazy.
So it's good news for a guy named Kimberly Rue, is the guy who wrote that song.
That's Katrina.
Oh, really?
I believe. Isn't that Katrina? I think that's Katrina's name.
I didn't think so. I thought Kimberly Rue was a member of the Soft Boys with Robin Hitchcock.
Then you're probably right then. It's a little foggy for me back in those days. You're probably
right. With all the blow you were doing, and all the X.
You know, I barely remember the
hardcore heroin.
Remember all those lewds you were giving those women and the cappuccinos too? That was bad news.
I'm sure that was Bean.
That was bad news back then. Bean would say, "I have a drink for you."
I think that wasn't me.
Welcome to K-Rock.
That's somebody else.
There's the little special bean punch. The next thing you know, girls will just fall.
That is quite a payday, though, here in 2015.
That's crazy.
When we hear music, is it worth anything? Now all of a sudden it is.
And while we're doing musical news, I don't know if you have heard the latest cover of Lady Gaga's Bad Romance.
I don't believe I have.
It is it's news because the new movie Ricky and the Flash is out in theaters. As I mentioned, it's number 7 this week. And apparently on the soundtrack album and in the film, the star of that film does a cover of Bad Romance. Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep rocking out Bad Romance.
Can she sing?
Well, you saw Mamma Mia. See Mamma Mia?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Yeah, she was singing her little heart out in that film. Maybe her voice is best suited for musicals, though, more than rock and roll. I don't know. Let's take a listen to Bad Romance by Meryl Streep and see if it's a hit or a miss.
Nope. Wow. Nope. Can we stop it?
Nope. Playing the whole song. Yeah. All right. We can stop there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem ideal.
I wonder why the movie was number 7 at the box office this weekend. With that in there, you'd think it'd be number 1.
Dude.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you heard her poker face, by the way?
No.
Meryl Streep doing Poker Face, the other Gaga song?
No.
I hear that. I hear that.
I got some of that, yeah. I mean, she's got quite a range, but still, not good.
Didn't she have another version of that as well?
I think I do have
an acapella version. Didn't she also release an acapella version of that song?
I think you're right, Ralph.
Poker face, poker face, poker face, poker face, mama.
Yeah, I like the unplugged.
What's
I like the
going
stripped
on
down
with her?
Version of that.
Wow, she sounds terrible.
It's the natural raw sound I'm looking for. You can't argue with failure.
That's true.
Sure. Today's celebrity birthdays: Rosanna Arquette is 56 years old today. Antonio Banderas is 55. Justin Theroux turns 44 years old. Angie Harmon of Rizzoli and Isles fame is 43. Devin Aoki celebrates her 33rd birthday. And Kylie Jenner, as we just heard from Harvey Levin. She got 17 Lamborghinis or something on her birthday. So congratulations to her. She's 18 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beats.
So I guess all we're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, is if you have not yet seen Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, you're a bad person, right?
That's correct, yes.
Right, because our friend Simon Pegg, who's on the phone, is also in the movie. Listen up.
Are you okay to drive? A minute ago, you were dead.
What are you talking about?
This is not going to end well.
Shutting down the IMF is a mistake you may regret.
Go. The syndicate is real, and they know who we are.
You need cooling!
The Rogue Nation, trained to do what we do.
An anti-IMF.
They're coming after us with everything they've got.
This may be our last mission. Let's make it count.
Make it count indeed. Simon Pegg, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good.
The great thing I said today, those words I just uttered.
Are you last time we talked to you, Simon, a few months ago, you were at home and you were surrounded by, if I remember correctly, you were surrounded by a pack of dogs that sounded like they were coming after you. Apparently you survived that. Are you at home again today?
That's right. No, I'm in Vancouver, actually. I'm in the right time zone for you.
Okay.
I'm shooting Star Trek Beyond in Vancouver, so yeah, I'm far from home, but having a lovely time here.
I love that you can say those words that you get up this morning and you go, I'm shooting Star Trek today. That's what I'm doing. That's my job, is going out there and being Scotty. It's kind of crazy.
It is crazy. It never sort of isn't crazy, and that's a lovely thing.
So Mission Impossible is taking over the world. Tell me about filming that with Tom Cruise and all the stunts that were going on and everything.
Yeah, it was a hoot. You know, we started off in Vienna and then went to Morocco, and we were in Casablanca and Rabat and Marrakesh, and then we wound up back in London for a lot of it, shooting at least in studios at the Warner Brothers studios at where they shot Harry Potter, the big studio complex in the UK. Which is about 25 minutes from where I actually live, which was a delight because it meant I could see my pack of dogs and sleep in my own bed. But it was a lovely day.
All over the world. And by the way, doesn't seem, we only know Tom Cruise a little bit through interviews, but having worked side by side with him a number of times now, he seems like he would be the most fun guy to be on a movie set with, because every day he seems so excited to be there and to do great work. Is it infectious having him on a movie set?
Yeah, it's great. He has this sort of 100% thing, Tom, which is infectious. You sort of want to match it, and you can't really get left behind. It engenders a great spirit of can-do with the entire crew, and it just makes it a big sort of a big laugh, the whole thing. I mean, he likes to keep things fun. He is a sort of he does like to mess around. I mean, people have their opinions about him, and most of those opinions are all based on sort of conjecture and what's said about him. And it's interesting that he doesn't really do that much to dispel any of those myths, you know. I think that suits him. It builds up a sort of mystique around him. So no one really. Everyone. The thing I get asked the most is, "What's he really like?"
Yeah. You
know, which says a lot about, you know, his kind of. His mythos as a movie star, you know.
I got to tell you, though, I feel just personally like if every once in a while I would wake up in the morning and I would be really tired and go, Tom, listen, turn it down a little. Dude, you can't be this happy all the time. Doesn't he?
Oh, that's it. Look, there are times when, you know, when we were shooting there's an incredible underwater sequence in the movie, and he... And Rebecca Ferguson, who is in the film, who's fantastic, they learned to hold their breath for like 6 minutes. And that shooting that stuff was really kind of quiet and tense. And I saw him get tired for the first time. It was so exhausting to do that stuff that he, you know, there were times when it was genuinely arduous stuff to do. And even though it was a fun job, you know, he's not like... This is another thing that he's kind of like, yeah, woo, the whole time. You know? he's like, you know, the weirdest thing? He's a person.
What?
No.
What?
That's Wait. the biggest.
Spoiler surprise. Alert. This is the voice of Simon Pegg here on the show. We're talking to him about, among other things, Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, currently in theaters everywhere. Speaking of Tom Cruise, he is so famous for – he's the biggest movie star in the world, but biggest movie star in the world who insists on doing so many of his own stunts. So does that put the pressure on you around him when he's willing to hang off a plane or climb a building or go underwater? You're a little
wuss if you say, "Nah, I want somebody to stand in for my stunts," right? You pretty much have to do them.
Well, fortunately, I am the nerd, techie guy who is generally in the basement on some sort of computer. And it's not often called on me to hang off an airplane, although by the time we do Mission Impossible 10, hanging off an airplane will probably be a minor stunt, which I will have to do. But I'm always up for doing that stuff. You know,
hey, you're in the car, though, man. That looks dangerous enough.
Yeah, I was. It was great. We started the sequence, and I asked the stunt coordinator who's going to be doing the driving, and he said, "Oh, I don't really have anyone better than Tom, so it's going to be Tom, and as such, it's going to be you in the passenger seat." So all that stuff was real, and it was like being on the most crazy fairground ride ever. Imagine being like on a roller coaster that's driven by Tom Cruise. That was what it was like.
Oh my God, Tom Cruise is your carny. That's so good.
His gold teeth are amazing.
Allie, you had a Star Wars question for Simon.
I do. I think it was about this time last year that all these headlines were coming out. Simon Pegg's daughter saves Star Wars. Due to her reaction to Yoda, I believe, in Empire Strikes Back. Can you talk a little bit about that and how your daughter's reaction to seeing Yoda as realistic kind of lends itself to the practical effects of this Star Wars?
Yeah, that was kind of that came out. One of the guys in Abu Dhabi, one of the puppeteers in Abu Dhabi, said it as a joke. And then, you know, JJ and his team have saved Star Wars. I felt like, oh no, that's not true, you know. But I just told JJ a story once about my daughter watching The Empire Strikes Back and seeing the Frank Oz puppeteered Yoda and looking at me and saying, "Oh, Dad, he's real," like, you know, which was such a beautiful reaction to that.
Yeah,
and a testament to practical effects in terms of how they can, you know, often feel very much like they're there and it's happening in front of the camera, which is a lovely thing. But that's not to sort of decry VFX in any way, because it's an amazing tool. I mean, there's plenty of VFX in Mission Impossible, you know, and I'm working daily with guys that do the VFX, which you might not even realize the VFX when you're watching. But there's just something, I think, to be said for a combination of the two, which working together, they can be absolutely amazing. Do you know what I mean? It can make you feel like you're watching something which is genuinely real and happening before your eyes. And I think there was a period when CG first came about, it was such an incredible tool. Everyone thought, oh, let's just use this the whole time.
Right.
And I think nowadays, what's happening now is that it's become in the paint box and is able to mix with, you know, techniques we already had, like mask making and model making, and you put them together and suddenly we're starting to see wonderfully kind of real, vivid stuff again.
How much of the new Star Wars film have you seen, Simon?
I've seen a bit, yeah.
That's all he can say, I'm imagining.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
So tell us about Absolutely Anything, which comes out this Friday. Are you in every movie?
No, it's one of those things that, you know, you make a bunch of films, and then the post-production period can sometimes sort of be one of the films has a short post-production, one of them has a really long one, and then they all come out at the same bloody time, and it feels like, oh God, people are going to be sick of me. It's a film I did with Terry Jones, who's one of the Monty Python guys, with the Monty Python team, and the late, great Robin Williams. It's a sort of secular Bruce Almighty. It's like a guy who's given ultimate power by a bunch of aliens and isn't very good with it. And, it's a very silly, fun film and a sweet swan song for Robin, just because it's a very exuberant and silly performance for him. You know, he was an incredibly versatile actor, but one thing that we really loved him for was when he was just bananas silly, and this is very much that.
Wonderful. The film is called Absolutely Anything. It also co-stars Kate Beckinsale and our friend Eddie Izzard, too. It comes out everywhere on Friday. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is in theaters right now. We'll let you get back to being Scotty, Simon. It's always great when you have time to check in with the Kevin Bean Show, man. We love you.
Love you, too. Always good to see you on the list.
All right. Thank you, man.
We're going to talk to comedian Kevin Farley later on today about the new documentary about his brother that airs tonight on the Spike Channel, by the way, called I Am Chris Farley. Speaking of comedy, I can't believe this is the first time we've ever had Maz Jobrani in studio with us here on the Kevin Amin Show, but he joins us now. Hey, Maz, how are you, man?
Hey, I am so excited to be here. I listen to you guys all the time, and I was always like, why aren't I ever on this show?
Well, you're very kind. Yeah. Appreciate that. Maz has shows coming up at the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach this weekend, Saturday and Sunday night, and at the Irvine Improv September 10th. You can go to MazJobrani.com for tickets and information. You're wearing a Cal Bears hat.
Yeah, I went to Cal.
You went to Berkeley?
Yeah.
Wow, you're smart.
No. I mean, it was easy back then. No, it was easy back then. You just had to protest, and they would take you.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
As long as you hated the man, they let you go to that school?
That was the final question on the test.
Do you hate the man?
No, it was like, who do you hate? Yeah. And I said, the man. They go, you're in, bro. Here, light this up. Let's smoke it.
So, Maz, for the benefit of our listeners who maybe haven't seen you on the TV or seen you around, you've been doing comedy a long, long time, right?
Yeah, man. I've been doing it for 17 years, and that's sad when I say that because that means I'm old.
No.
Tell me about –
Unless
tell
you
me
started
about,
really, really young, you could look at it that way.
I was only four.
Yeah,
there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tell me about the early rumblings. We're always fascinated to hear the terrible decision that comedians make when they realize that that's what they have to do for a living, because it's not an easy life for most people.
Oh, it's not at all. I mean, but that's why I always say you got to love it, because, you know, you run into – like, I tried a lot of other things along the way. Like, at one point, somebody had me convinced that I should do long distance phone sales.
Long distance phone sales.
Yeah, like there was this company that like you could like you. This is before cell phones. I told you I'm old. So there was like this company. It was kind of like a pyramid scheme, and they were like, "All right, what you do is you buy this phone service, and then you're going to go sell it to your family, and you too will be rich like me and driving a Mercedes."
And like, you thought, "Yes, I'm in."
I thought I was like, "This is a good idea. This is going to work." And so I tried, and it was – so this is my point is like when you're not passionate about something, I tried, and the first customer I went to was my mom. I was like, Mom, I got a great deal for you, and I did the whole spiel, and she's like, get out of here, you idiot. Go. I don't want your long distance. I have my own. So right – and I was like, you know what? I quit. That was it.
Wow. Not much stick-to-itiveness there.
Yeah, because I just wasn't into it. Now
– you can't sell to your mom. You can't sell to anybody.
Forget it.
Is your mom supposed to get it just because it's you?
Of course you're supposed to support me.
Where's the support?
Where's the support, Mom? But she was like, yeah, this is stupid. She was, even she – my mom – I mean, I'm from Iran originally. My mom, she's an immigrant mother. Even she knew it was a scam.
Right.
You know?
Okay. All right. So that didn't work out for you. What did you try after that?
Well, after that, I worked in advertising as an assistant, which was fine. That was good. But my point is that I just wasn't into this stuff. But then when you get into stand-up and they make you do, like, for example, like with stand-up comedy, one of my first gigs was at a strip club. And
what?
Yeah. And I mean, I was dancing.
Nothing personal. I don't want to hear from you at a strip club.
No, I don't either.
Okay.
No, you know what it was? It was this guy.
What a terrible idea.
It was a horrible idea. This guy had what they're called bringer rooms, which is where you book a bunch of new comedians, and everyone's got to bring like five people. And then that way you fill the room.
So and you tried to get your mom.
Tried to get my mom. strip club.
She's like, I love this place.
Yeah. Does it come with phone service? So it was like in the back room at a strip club. And it was one of my earliest gigs. And the guy said, I'll give you $5 for every person that you bring with you.
All right.
Yeah. And so we live in Los Angeles. And again, I'm Persian. And there's a lot of Persians in Los Angeles. And I told like two Persians. I said, don't tell anybody else. Because I didn't want that many people come to a strip club to see me. And, of course, they all tell each other. And so we do this show, and there was like 40 audience members, and 35 of them were my people.
Pretty sweet.
Oh. Yeah.
That's quite a payday for you, though, Maz.
Well, exactly. I got paid. It was great. It was amazing. It was the first time. But the crazy thing was I show up at the club, and the guy who was running it, he's like, hey, I got some bad news. I go, what? He goes, there's no microphone. I go, what? Yeah. He goes, well, the club owners, they sold the strip club last night, and they took the microphone.
What?
Oh,
yeah.
My.
I was like, why would you, if you sell a strip club, there's a lot of other things. Why wouldn't you take the pole?
Right. Or,
you know, why take the DJ. Why are you taking the microphone?
And there's like, no microphone.
No microphone. So we had to do the show without a microphone. We're screaming at the audience. The guy puts me up last because everyone's there to see me.
Sure, you're the closer.
I'm the closer. And right. You know, at that point, it's early on in my career, and it's a bringer room, so we're all horrible. So the people that had come to see me had to sit through really bad comedy to watch me do really bad comedy. Oh. And then in the middle of the whole thing, some like gangbangery dude walked into this back room with a stripper, sat in the middle of the room, just started having a conversation with her loud. And the comedian on stage was like, excuse me, sir, we have a show going on here? And the guy's like, mind your own business. And then he started doing it again. The guy started talking. The guy goes, sir, I'm trying to do a show. And the guy's like, yo, I told you, mind your own business. And everyone in the room just clenched up. We're like, uh-oh, we're about to get shot. And so it was like the worst experience. And so this is 17 years ago. There was a handful of, like, out of those 35, 30 of those people have never come to see me again.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, but you ruined them for comedy for life.
But something about that night said to you, you need to do this.
Yeah, you got to keep going. This is not like that phone service stuff. There's potential here.
But they always say, and maybe they generally use this as an analogy for, you know, for addicts that they have to hit rock bottom. At least you could drive home that night, Maz, and go, well, that's it. That's the lowest it could possibly be. That's the worst gig I could possibly have from now on. It's got to get better.
Yeah, well, that's what you think. But then, you know, they keep coming, man.
No, that's right.
Well, you know, I heard Dom Herrera say one time, he said, you know, when you're doing stand-up comedy, you're going to bomb. But the beauty is the longer you do it, the percentages of bombing and having crazy nights like that get less and less. But mm-hmm. but there's always, every once in a while when something like that happens, you're like, ooh, I got it out of my system for the year or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? So I've had the opposite where like I did an event. It was like some really hoity-toity, like high-end event where they'd hired me. It was Aramco, which is the Saudi oil company.
Okay.
And I thought, okay. I said, well, that's a little racist, but that's fine. I mean, that's okay. I'm Persian. It works. And I thought there was going to be like a bunch of like Saudis, but I showed up and it was people that do business with them. And it was an older demographic. Like the youngest person there was probably like 60.
Good.
And ooh. Older.
So that's your crowd.
Totally my crowd. And I'm sitting there, I'm doing my material. No one's laughing. Nothing's working. Now I'm a bald dude. No. I'm a bald dude. So I'm going, let me do some crowd work. So I look over at some bald guy, maybe like 65, 70, and I start doing crowd work with him about being bald. And a little bit into the bald jokes, I realize I don't know if he's voluntarily, he might be going through chemo.
Oh,
and I'm like, okay.
So then you went to your cancer set.
Yeah, cancer set. Yeah. And that was one of those where I just bought, I was like, in my mind, I'm like, okay, these guys, I just got to get through this. Like 15 more minutes, I got a shot of tequila waiting for me. Let me just get through this. So, you know, it's all over the place.
Maz Jobrati is here in studio. You can see him this weekend at the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach. That is Saturday and Sunday, and you'll be at the Irvine Improv September 10th. When we come back, we need to talk about, among other things, Maz, your comedy special on Showtime. That is a big deal. You just talked about the terrible gigs you've had. You got to be doing a lot of things right to get a special on Showtime, and that airs next Friday night, August 21st. It's called I'm Not a Terrorist, but I Played One on TV. We'll discuss with Maz right after this on camera. Comedian Maz Jobrati in studio with us here on The Kevin and Bean Show. He's this guy.
But one of the things I try to do with my stand-up is to break stereotypes, and I've been guilty of stereotyping as well. I was in Dubai, and there's a lot of Indians who work in Dubai, and they don't get paid that well, and I got in my head that all the Indians there must be workers, and I forgot there's obviously successful Indians in Dubai as well. I was doing a show, and they said, we're going to send a driver to pick you up. So I went down to the lobby and I saw this Indian guy. I go, he's got to be my driver. Because he was standing there in like a cheap suit, thin mustache, staring at me. So I went over, excuse me, sir, are you my driver? He goes, no, sir. I own the hotel. I go, I'm sorry, then why were you staring at me? He goes, I thought you were my driver.
Maz's comedy special is called I'm Not a Terrorist, but I Played One on TV. That's going to be airing next Friday, August 21st at 10 on Showtime. I mean, that's a hook for you when you walk out on stage. Much like our mutual friend Brad Williams has to address, he's a little person. That's kind of your starting point for your comedy, right? Is, hey, look at me. I'm not a terrorist. I just play one.
Yeah, you know, for the longest time starting out, I talked a lot about my ethnicity and my background, and I continue to talk about that stuff because I think there's a lot of issues to talk about, you know, like being Iranian in America. I mean, we just had this nuclear deal, you know. It's like it's just nonstop. I always said, like, Iran can't stay out of the news. It's like they have the same publicists as the Kardashians, you know, or Trump. Iran is the Trump of the world, like they, you know, especially under Ahmadinejad. When the president Ahmadinejad and Bush were in office, it was comedy gold. because they just kept saying stuff that you were like, I can't believe I don't have to even write a joke. You just go out and like with Bush, you'd be like, did you hear? He almost choked on a pretzel. He almost remember that, yes. You know. And then Ahmadinejad saying stuff like, we have no gays,
yeah.
You know?
Right.
You know, that whole thing. So all that stuff was easy, and so that stuff I still have to acknowledge. But you know, people that will hopefully watch the special and come out to my shows now, they see that I also talk a lot about. I got young kids. I got a 4-year-old girl and a 7-year-old boy, and that is like you can't not write material about them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, anyone who's got young kids, I always say like they know like they're the most exhausting people in the world. And your whole goal from the moment they wake up is just to make them tired, right? From the moment they wake up, I'm like, run, climb, fly, do whatever you got to do. And it's just like constant. So now I mix it up. I do some stuff about, you know, my background and some stuff about the kids, you know.
You moved to America when you were very young, 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, I was 6 years old, right around the time of the revolution. And we came to America. It was interesting because back then nobody knew that the revolution was going to actually happen in Iran. So if you go and look at some like news articles, you'll see that like there's protests, but people think ultimately the Shah's going to stop it all. So I always say my dad was on business in New York, and he sent for my mom to bring me and my sister to New York to stay with him for 2 weeks during our winter break. And so I would say we packed for 2 weeks and we stayed for 35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
You just never went back. Do you have any kind of warm, fuzzy feeling for Iran at all? Or, I mean, you're aware that it's in your heritage, but, I mean, you've been raised in America as an American.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've always had – because Iran – look, again, living in L.A., like you go to Westwood, it's like being in Iran. You know, so there's so many Iranians. It's true. And the Iranian people are such good people. I keep hearing it, and I agree with people. Like, we're very hospitable. We love to feed you. Ali was just talking about, yeah. Right?
My best friend growing up, I would go over there, eat, and then smell like the food for a week. It was the
best. Is
that good?
Oh,
okay. It was so
all right.
Good.
Just checking.
It would permeate your pores.
Yeah, it's delicious. The food's delicious. The people are hospitable. So, and I went back around almost 17 years ago, right when I was starting stand-up, I went back. And I visited for 2 weeks, and it was great. Again, the people were great, the family was great, but the one thing that, you know, I did not like was this whole like the being under the regime and fearing that somebody might bother you for something. To this day, like the reason I don't go back is because I've done jokes about the leadership.
I was going to ask if it's easy to go back.
No,
it doesn't
like,
seem like it.
No, I'd hate to like show up at the airport to be a guy with a sign. Where have you been? We've been waiting for you. You know, it's like, you know, your next show is in prison. You know, because I've done jokes about the leadership, so I don't think they'd take that too well. You know,
Maz, the name of your special is "I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Played One on TV," and that's for real, right?
Yeah, like early on in my career, I did a Chuck Norris movie of the week. Thank you.
Nice.
You know, and it was funny because I was.
Is he as powerful as we're told?
Oh, he's amazing. He was his aura, his vibe, his smell. Very, very beefy. A lot of beef. No.
His smell is beefy.
Smell is beefy. Eau de boeuf. No, he was, it was funny because this is when I had the assistant job at the ad agency, and I got this gig to play an Afghan terrorist. This is before September 11th. Afghan terrorist was going to blow up a building in Chicago. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, should I do it? Should I not? But I had a day job. I had to take this because I was like, maybe it'll help my career. And furthermore, I thought, maybe through my acting ability, mm-hmm. I can show why this guy's doing what he's doing. I will be the thespian that I was born to be. Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I wish your guys' laughter had been in my head right then.
How long was it until you realized that wasn't going
to
happen?
Man, I went to the wardrobe fitting. I'm playing an Afghan in America. The lady, poor lady, she goes, here's your shirt, here's your pants, here's your turban. And I was like, whoa. I go, wait a minute. I go, listen, no, Afghans in America don't wear turbans. I go, Indian Sikhs wear turbans. Let's get this right. And the lady was like, dude, this is a Chuck Norris movie?
Yeah.
So
it's not about accuracy, Maz.
Yeah.
Put this on.
Yeah, here's the turban. Don't forget the basket and the snake. Get the hell out of here. You know. But no, it was a very humbling experience, and it made me not want to do any more terrorist parts. And then the TV show 24 called, and they go, we got a terrorist. I go, no thanks. And then they go, but he changes his mind halfway through the mission. And I was like, ooh, the ambivalent terrorist.
Yeah. I can teach people.
Yeah, exactly. The thespian in me has another chance. And I did that, and I got killed in that as well. And then I just stopped. I haven't done any more terrorist parts or terrorist auditions since.
If you wanted to do something else, could you in the world of acting?
No. I've 20 years no acting. No, I'm kidding. No, I do. I've actually, it's been good. I've had a chance to do all. Once you say no in people say no in Hollywood is like the strongest word. It really
is. It's unheard of, right? Because yeah. You just won a gig.
Yeah, it's great. And being a stand-up comedian, it helps me because I get to go and talk about all my experiences and I get to continue to work no matter what. But I've had a chance now, like in the remember the Sean Penn Nicole Kidman movie called The Interpreter that Sidney Pollack directed. I played a Secret Service agent that was Arab American, so that was great.
All right,
I just did a guest star. I'll be in the season premiere of Grey's Anatomy, where I just play a Middle Eastern guy who's at the hospital.
Do you blow it up?
Of course, but I mean, you know, But I mean, I've had a chance by saying no. You play other parts. I made my own movie. It's called Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero. Which is kind of like.
Do we have to say it like that?
Of course.
You have to say Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero.
Beautiful. You nailed it.
I don't know if I'm the hero.
No, it's this movie that I made that I describe it as a cross between the Persian Pink Panther meets Borat. And it's the story of this guy who's living in Iran and he's obsessed with being an American hero because he's been a big fan of Steve McQueen's since he saw the movie Bullet. And he finally wins the green card lottery to come to America, and he wants to be a cop and save the day. But once he gets here, the best job he can get is working as a security guard at a Persian grocery store. And then from there, he's got to go on and save the world. And it's kind of a slapstick comedy. It premiered at the Austin Film Festival last year, and it won a couple of comedy awards there. And we hope to have it out in the early new year. But the point behind it is that it's the hero, the guy who saves the film, is an Iranian. I play the character. So, and the tagline is, you don't have to be American to be an American hero. So again, it's taking that angle and going like, look, you can see us in another light. And hopefully people will come and laugh and enjoy it.
Do you feel like that has changed at all?
Very little.
I mean, do you still have to fight that fight, and do you feel like you're making zero progress?
Listen, we're making a little bit of progress. I was just telling Ali a second ago, there was an article in the GQ that has Amy Schumer on the cover. There's a whole article. I'm in it. It's about...
I read that. That was good.
Yeah, thanks. It's John Ronson is the author, and it's about actors of Arab descent, Iranian descent, and the roles we have to take. Those probably still, I would say, I don't know the exact number, but I would say like 7 or 8 out of 10 are still... the terrorist guy, the bad guy, like that, you know. But I think what we need to do, and it's starting to happen slowly, is to have more people from our backgrounds telling the stories, writing, directing. Because ultimately, right. That's the person who's going to be like, no, I don't want to tell a story about a terrorist. I want to tell a story about whatever, a family and their experience, whatever, getting a divorce, and then the kid ends up being a rock star. I don't know. That's a horrible movie. Horrible movie.
I know, I'm kind of in.
Maybe that's why we're not making those movies.
Yeah. All right, Boz. Well, listen, great start to this dialogue. I'm so glad we finally had you in. Have fun this weekend at the Comedy Magic Club in Hermosa Beach Saturday and Sunday, and then at the Irvine Improv September 10th. We're very excited. We're setting up our DVRs right now for I'm Not a Terrorist, But I Played One on TV. That's going to be on August 21st at Showtime. Please come back and see us again, sir. We enjoyed it.
Thanks so much. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, and have a great day, and this is exciting.
It is 7:52.
Hey, as we're waiting for Mr. Garmin to step in, I'll remind you that today you can meet Beer Mug from 1 till 3 at the Hot Topic store in Riverside in the Galleria at Tyler. He's going to have Foo Fighters tickets, Social D tickets, Mumford & Sons, Rise Against, so much more. It's all part of the 2015 K-Rock Summer Sticker Campaign at all Southern California Hot Topic locations. Fill one out, send it in. You can win a trip for two to see Muse in Mexico City, a 2015 Dodge Challenger, lots of other good prizes. Get all the details at krock.com. But again, Hot Topic in Riverside this afternoon starting at 1. Meet K-Rock's Beer Mug. Hey, Ralph Garmin.
Hey.
Time for the Showbiz Beat.
Meet Beer Mug? That's the sell? That's the attraction?
Well, it's the prizes. You go through Beer Mug to get the great K-Rock prizes and the tickets and that sort of thing.
Now it's all starting to come together for me. Steve-O is crazy.
Yes.
Remember when we used to think it was the drugs?
Yes.
Yeah. Then he got sober?
Uh-huh.
Still crazy. Not the drugs.
Yeah.
It's just crazy. But in the best possible way.
Sure.
I mean that in a good way. He was arrested in Hollywood after climbing a crane last night.
Who hasn't done that?
Right? We all do that. Steve was, he was climbing a construction site crane, towering at least 100 feet above the ground, in a protest against SeaWorld.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Emergency responders had to be called to the site. He was there on the tip of the crane with a giant inflatable whale.
Hmm. Okay. Was he banging it? Because I know Steve-O.
No, I don't believe so. No,
yeah, wasn't. Dude.
He was just trying to make a point, and he made it. A lot of attention was drawn to the fact that he is anti-SeaWorld. In his response to the 2013 documentary Blackfish, which, if you saw, is just devastating regarding the treatment of killer whales in captivity at SeaWorld. And so he wanted to make a point and draw some attention to that cause, and he certainly did that.
Last time we had Steve-O on, I think it was after he had gotten the ladder, remember, and climbed up on one of the signs up above the five and put the word sucks after SeaWorld's exit or something.
Yeah, he was on the
five. He was basically challenging the California Highway Patrol to come arrest him for it.
Right. Well,
I don't think they did that time.
His dreams
like
came true last night. Yeah. Fire trucks arrived. Ambulance was there. The crew was ready to preparing a cushion for him in case he fell. But they got him down and arrested him. So,
do you think SeaWorld is a sustainable plan for the future, or do you think it's going to be shut down at some point, probably in our lifetimes?
I think it's a sustainable plan. I mean, I think there are those who care, but I think more people don't.
Enough people go to make it profitable.
Yeah. And I think more people care about their own pleasure and entertainment than they do about what's right and wrong anymore. Yeah. I was thinking about that, you know. You know, I was on vacation last week, and the whole thing was going on with Donald Trump and the Republican debate was going on with those 10 folks. And what was it 24 million people tuned in to watch?
Yeah,
largest cable audience
NBA finals, NBA finals level audience. Yeah,
largest non-sport cable event ever. And I thought to myself as I looked at that, and I watched Hillary Clinton posing with Kim and Kanye. That it's over now. Now it's over.
That's it?
It's over.
Our best days are behind us?
Oh, well, that was some time ago. It's beyond that now. Now it's actually over. Because
Ralph,
no one gives a rat's ass about the problems in the country or politics or how to fix things. It's just theater now. It's just bread and circuses. And in order to get elected, you have to be come out of a clown car, or you have to get your picture taken with Kanye West. I mean, the stuff you have to do now to get elected into office shows that America just doesn't give an S anymore about anything of substance. It's all just theater.
But, Ralph, everywhere I look, I see our generation's Thomas Jefferson, Alexander Hamilton, Benjamin Franklin,
John Adams. You don't
see
them at all. No.
See them all. It's nothing but statesmen.
Nope. It's just people in line at Starbucks looking at their phone in skinny jeans and beards. That's all we got left. Screw you, America. Screw you, America, indeed. So I'm saying now.
That's a great man once said.
That guy was right, whoever he was.
That guy knew what he was talking about.
He was a smart man.
Screw you, America.
Indeed. Just F America and elect Trump, because that's what you deserve. That's what we all deserve. And let's just go down. If we're going to go down, let's go down to just a fireball of disaster.
Ralph, did you, I don't know what your work schedule was like from last week, but did you get a chance to actually see the GOP debates?
I did not actually see them in its entirety. I just saw the highlights. I went back.
Okay, because we were talking about it the next morning. If you'd have seen how giddy the moderators were for the event, it was like we were watching American Idol. I mean, it really was. They were just all goofing around and making faces.
Well, it's theater. It's bread and circuses, man. It's
They weren't taking it very seriously is what I'm saying.
Lions and the Christians. It's just entertainment. Nothing else matters to anyone anymore except entertain me. Just make me feel something, because I'm just dead inside. So trot out the clown with the hair, or Kim and Kanye get a selfie with the Hillary Clinton, or make whales jump through hoops for me. Let me kiss a dolphin. Let me just, I don't care about anything except, can I feel something for a second before I go back to my dead life on the couch? Thanks.
USA!
I don't
USA!
Think. I don't feel like.
USA!
Screw you, America.
Yeah. That guy had it right.
It's the most depressive thing I've ever heard.
It's grim times.
It is.
You know, the thing about vacation when you leave the show is you disconnect, you disengage, you're not wallowing around in it.
Yeah, we looked at that as comedy. that's the way we took it,
right?
Because we're doing
sure,
the show
because you need your content, right. And you got to put your show on, and you're trying to find material to talk about and things to do. So that's funny. But if you're disengaged at all, if you get a little bit of distance and a little bit of perspective, it's not funny at all.
See, that's why perspective is bad. Is that what we're saying?
I feel like that's what he's
missing my point.
Yeah.
I'm just saying having the week off and not having to come up with jokes and shtick about this and everything, it just was depressing. It was just sad.
America.
As I believe it was David St. Hubbard said in This Is Sparta, too much effing perspective is what I was encountering last week. So, all right, that being said. How about movies, huh? How about the box office?
Hey, how about that?
This is something we care about. How much money did Mission Impossible make this weekend?
That's what's important.
That's what matters to America. Well, your answer is $29.4 million for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, making it number one again for the second week in a row. Fantastic Four was number two. The Gift was third. Vacation and Ant-Man were the top five movies at the box office. Then Minions, Ricky and the Flash, Trainwreck, Pixels, and Southpaw were your top 10 movies at the box office. Speaking of movies, if you got the kids, which all I seem to do anymore is see kid movies. Yesterday afternoon, the wife and little Olivia and I went to see Shaun the Sheep. The Sheep movie?
Yeah.
From the Aardman Studios, who did Wallace and Gromit. They do that stop-motion animation film.
Right.
Brilliantly funny, entertaining movie. Shaun the Sheep. Loved it. Probably loved it more than the kids did. But if you're looking for a movie to see with your kids that will not bore you, that you'll be happy that you saw, I recommend that highly. It was very entertaining.
Where's that in the top 10, by the way? Or was it just in limited release?
I believe it's in limited release, but I also hear it's not doing well at the box office.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Because Donald Trump isn't boning a whale in it.
Wait, what movie is that?
Yeah, right? That's the one you want to go see. It's a small, little, funny, little... gentle British film that's just very entertaining. And it's a silent film, basically. It's a silent film.
I'm out.
No, Kevin, it's not.
I can't. I'm out.
It's not like The Artist.
Nope.
It's not about a...
No, sir.
It's not a tap dancer.
Nope.
In black and white.
No, sir.
It's a regular film.
No,
thank
you.
But they don't lean on dialogue. It's very visual. It's very entertaining. Try it.
No.
Give it a chance.
No, but I will tell you this.
No, you won't.
The Gift.
Because I'm moving on.
The Gift I saw this weekend is great.
There you go.
I can't believe Beer Mug hung up on Joel Edgerton last week.
I think that was you again, Kevin.
He keeps
doing that.
All you.
It's great.
Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Kylie Jenner's 18 years old today. I'm sorry, but it's my job. Actress
Screw
Devin,
you, America.
Devin Aoki. It's hard when you know you're contributing. You're contributing to the death of a great nation. It's hard. It's hard to show up to work the next day when you say, "Well, let me shove a little bit more dirt on the grave." Then here's my spade. Where do I cover up the corpse? Oh, here I go. Here's Kylie Jenner's birthday. Happy birthday, Kylie Jenner. 18 years old, giving out socks to kids.
What?
She was trying to be doing some grandstanding charity moment where she went to a children's hospital handing out gifts to sick kids. And one of the gifts she handed out to kids, I'm not effing making this up, was her brother Rob Kardashian's signature sock line.
Oh, no.
She was giving designer socks to critically ill children. That's the end times, right? When Kylie Jenner is a legitimate star of some magnitude, and she's giving out her brother's designer socks
USA!
To dying
USA!
Children.
USA!
How do you know, Ralph?
USA!
How do you know maybe they don't have socks and it's great?
That's the bottom. We've hit the bottom when that's the gift she's giving to sick children.
My only regret is that she's constitutionally too young to be Donald Trump's vice president.
Yes. Me too. Actress Devin Aoki's 33 years old today. Angie Harmon from Rizzoli and Isles is 43. Justin Theroux, he just got married to Jennifer Aniston. That's news. 44 years old today. Antonio Banderas is 55. And Rosanna Arquette. Oh, Rosanna. What? I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Rosanna.
Nope.
Come on.
Nope. No, sir.
56 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I may be back. I may not.
Skating legend Paul Rodriguez Jr. on the program later on this week. Also, actor Nat Faxon is going to be joining us. We got Ice Cube coming up. We got, for the World Poker Tour, Mike Sexton and Vince Van Patten on the program today. Lots of good stuff. Plus, the pole dance fitness finals are this week. You remember we talked to our girl last year.
Right on.
About that. Did you go and do some pole dancing? What did we do? Did we send somebody for some sort of video last year?
I don't remember doing any pole dancing myself.
Okay, it might have been Muggs. Anyway, so we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. And, of course, tomorrow here on the Kevin and Bean Show, we've got the Bachelor in Paradise report with Ralph and Petros Papadakis. First, though, there's a young lady named Nicole Barr. She lives in Harlow in Essex, England. And she is in the news right now because she just took the IQ test and scored in the top 1% of intelligent people in the world. She scored 162.
Is that good?
On her IQ test. That is good, Kevin. Average is 100. Allie, you probably know more about this than I do, but the reason 100 is average is because that's the average of how smart people are, right? 100 moves based on how smart people are who take the test, right?
Yes.
She doesn't know.
Okay.
Oh,
all
no.
Right. Anything above 140 is considered to be genius. Little Nicole, 12 years old, scored 162, which, by the way, if you're keeping track at home, if you're playing the home IQ game, is ahead of where Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking were on the scale. They were just under 160, so she's 162. So what does that mean for her, do you think? Good news? Bad news? Are you delighted if that's your daughter? I mean, obviously you want your kid to be smart. Do you want your kid to be that smart, or at some point is that an impediment?
I would think it would be an impediment socially because you would just not be able to, you know, communicate
to
with other
people. With
yes,
others.
To interact or be interested in anything that's being said. You'd be bored all the time.
But this doesn't say anything to us about her personality. We don't know what she's like in terms of being somebody to have a, you know, a hamburger with or something. You're saying she wouldn't be interested in regular topics because she's so smart?
I would think, as you know, people's conversations, school, everything would be sort of boring.
Hmm.
Because it's
that,
too easy.
But then I think about people that do actually take the test and are shocked at what their IQ is, and then they're in Mensa, and you had no idea. So that way it doesn't really add up because they're sociable, they're fun, they're this, they're that. They have no idea they're that smart. So maybe it's almost better that you don't know.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering too. I almost wonder if it's kind of just hanging something on you that now you've got to deal with. By the way, we'd be fascinated to hear from people who are Mensa smart, whether you're in Mensa or not. You are genius level intelligence. We would love to hear from you at 1-800-520-1067 and find out what that's like for you on a day-to-day basis. Is it like what Kevin says, where a lot of conversations that other people have are kind of boring to you? Is it difficult to find a job that is stimulating enough? Is it difficult to find a romantic partner that you are interested in because they're not nearly as smart as you? I mean, there must be some upsides and some downsides to this, I would imagine.
It's not just age either. She's 12, but when she's 18, when she's 25, when she's 35, she's going to be way smarter than...
Right.
Yeah, and you almost think, maybe I don't tell people.
Keep it to yourself.
Oh, I would think you'd never want to tell anybody.
Ever.
I would think. That would be, yeah. So 1-800-520-1067. We want to hear from the smarties. If you're, by the way, if you're that smart, you're not listening to this program anyway.
Yeah,
so I don't know what we're going to get on this. You know, I don't know any geniuses personally, Allie, but I'm thinking about the people in Hollywood, like James Woods, for instance. He's super Mensa, right?
Mm-hmm.
Penn Jillette, super Mensa. Mm-hmm. Really brilliant guys. Both of them extremely, you know, great conversation, lots of interest, seem to have a lot of friends, great social life, family life.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it's held those guys back, and they're way smart.
No, and I think Gina Davis is
Gina Davis, another
well.
One. Yes,
yeah.
That's right. And she, you know, developed, obviously, as an Oscar-winning actress. She also was, you know, went to the Olympics as an archer. I mean, she's got lots of other skills. She's good at lots of other things. It doesn't seem like it's held her back at all. Here's a little something about little Nicole. She said, when I found out I got such a high score, it was so unexpected, I was shocked. I remember when I was in primary school and I was an angel in the school play, and another girl who played the other angel didn't turn up, so I learned her lines too. So I guess that's the sort of thing she can do because she's
never thought about it. Just is like, I'll just learn it.
Because she's just smart, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, Kevin, you're the closest thing I know to a genius. I mean,
thank you, Bean.
Is it tough to hang out with lots of dumb people?
People who really who can't speak and forget a lot of things.
Well, you tell me. You're the one that has to hang out with the dumb people.
So I don't know. I mean, would you ever – let me ask you this question, because they had her take the IQ test because they wanted to see if she would get into Mensa. They felt like she was smart and she probably would. Would you ever have your kid take an IQ test?
I don't. I wouldn't, and I didn't.
Like, what's the upside of it, right?
I didn't. This is the honest truth. I have thought about it through the years. I thought, you know what? Maybe I should take an IQ test. But then I realized, you know what? I'm happy now. What if I find out I'm dumb? Now does that mean I'm unhappy? I like the way I am right now, although I would give up some of my mistakes. I mean, I don't like that. But I don't know. I feel like now if you put a label on it, you know, let's be honest. I'm scoring like 65.
But what if, right? What 66, if you scored 65. 165? What if you were such a genius that you couldn't wrap your head around how to be that way?
I'm smart enough to see that as a trap, Allie.
Well done.
Hey,
Kevin.
Maybe I am smart enough. I should take the test. No, I haven't, because I'm happy the way I am and I don't want to put that on myself.
How about your kids? Would you have your kids take an IQ test?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
How about if it helped them get into college, for instance?
Maybe. Here's the thing, though. I think there are much more important things than how smart you are. I think it's more important that you're a good person than you're a smart person.
And good looking.
Right. Thank you.
Right?
More
thank
importantly,
you for
good
noticing.
Right.
Thank exactly. You. I appreciate that.
All right. Aaron, you hang on. We're going to come to you first when we get back. We got to take a quick break. Nick as well, Mateen, everybody hang on. We're talking to smart people today. Is it a burden, or is it a blessing, or is it a curse to be a genius? If you're above 140 on the IQ scale, we want to hear from you. If you're in Mensa, we want to talk to you. That's coming up next on K-Rock.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 25 minutes after 8 o'clock.
Talking about a little 12-year-old named Nicole Barr. She's in England. She's in the news because she just scored 162 on an IQ test. Anything over 140 is genius, by the way. This puts her ahead of where Albert Einstein and Stephen Hawking were. Is that how you want to go? Is that the life? Do you want to be that smart? That's the question. Jerry writes in, Dear Kevin and Bean, I'm not sure if you guys truly understand your demographic, but none of your listeners are in Mensa. Myself included, Jerry. Well, let's find out if that's true. Let's go to line 4, please, and talk to Aaron in Irvine. Aaron, thank you for calling. Thank you for holding on. So you're one of those smarty pants we've heard about.
Yeah, so I have to totally disagree with Jerry. I am smart, and I listen to K-Rock and to you guys all the time.
How do you not pull your hair out when you listen to
a stupid scream at the radio all the time, right?
There's moments when I slap my forehead and go, oh, my God, seriously?
What's happening?
Yeah.
So, Aaron, be straight with us here, because we can't imagine what it's like to be as smart as you. What's it like for you to work, to live in the world with, quote-unquote, normal people?
Well, here's the thing. You have to remember, it's a skill. It's a talent. And it's what you do with it that matters. And IQ is basically nothing more than your ability to learn. So if you are able to learn and you're able to utilize that skill, good for you. You're going to be a Stephen Hawking or an Albert Einstein or something like that. If it's not your passion, you're just going to do what everybody else does.
Is it difficult for you to have a conversation with most guys?
I'm talking to you, aren't I?
I'm asking if it's difficult.
And it's like pulling teeth.
Like, how's dating for you, Aaron, when you're probably smarter than most of the guys you go out with?
You know, I actually have a boyfriend, and he is the sweetest guy ever, and he says that he knows that I'm smarter than him, and mm-hmm. that's okay. It doesn't bother him. He's not insecure. Most people that I know say, yeah, they know that I'm smarter than them, but it doesn't matter because I don't act like it. I don't put myself, you know, above them just because I'm smarter. I'm just a normal human being, just like everybody else.
What kind of work did you end up going into, Aaron?
Believe it or not, I'm a project manager for a health insurance company.
Oh.
So, you know, but I know other people who are genius level people, and they are doctors, but I know other people who are genius level, and they're an administrative specialist, you know, in, you know, or a server at a restaurant.
Not oh, wow. Okay.
What your IQ is, it's what you do with it that matters. It's
all right, last question for you.
I don't understand anything you're saying.
What goes on at those Mensa meetings? Are you like drinking virgin blood and stuff? What's happening?
You know, I don't even go to it. It's not even a big thing for me. I joined when I was 13 or 14, and I've never really participated.
Because dorks, okay. Right?
No. But it's just
I'm just kidding.
Hey, I'm one of those dorks.
I know. I'm just kidding, Aaron.
All right, Aaron, you are awesome. We appreciate very much you listening and calling. Thank you. Let's go to Melanie, Long Beach, Line 7, please, up next on the Kevin and Bean Show. Talking to our genius Kevin and Bean listeners.
Sure.
Yes, advertisers, you too can reach geniuses in Southern California on our program. Hi, Melanie.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
So your family's super smart. Tell me about that.
So I loved Aaron's call just now because I come from a family of hyper-intelligent underachievers.
Hyper-intelligent and underachievers. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And her point about your IQ really just being indicative of your aptitude to learn is so true. My dad is actually a member of Mensa. He had me tested when I was young, and I tested at 151. And I have a younger brother who has been tested at 158.
Wow. So he's like 151. What's that like?
158 is about is almost as high as you can go on the scale, right?
I'm sorry.
158 is very near the top of the top 1%, right?
I mean, it's no 162, but yeah, he's definitely like kind of the intellectual elite. And you know, and as a child, I mean, at 3 years old, he was reading at an eighth grade level. At 6 years old, he was tutoring me in advanced calculus.
I hate that kid. I hate your brother.
Oh, and I used to tell him all the time I was the smart kid until you were born. However, when he reached high school, he just got to a place where he was so understimulated, even by honors courses, he ended up being like a C student. And
wow.
When we would try to work with him on his grades, his response was, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know how to teach to them at that point. They're so far advanced.
They're also teaching to the bottom level, basically, in the class.
That's true. That's a good point, Kevin. Let me ask you this, Melanie. Do you wish that you guys had not been tested?
I mean, for me, it kind of didn't faze me one way or the other, partly because my dad is very, very into his own Mensa certification, and for him, it's like kind of his business card. And we got so sick and tired of hearing about how smart dad was that for us, I think we all kind of were like, well, that's nice information. We don't really care.
Right. So dad's a dick.
I mean,
dad's a dick.
Yeah.
Melanie, you don't have to agree with Kevin right now.
You should never agree with Kevin.
As smart as
you are, you should never agree with Kevin. Melanie, all right, last question because we're almost out of time, and you're awesome to call. I noticed that both you and Aaron, the caller before you, are very articulate and very quick. Is that typical of people who are smart, or are there people who just you would never know to talk to them because they just sound dumb and dull?
There are plenty who sound dumb and dull but would shock you if you passed them. I was a bookworm. People joke that when most people had friends, I had books. And so that does a lot to kind of shape your vocabulary, I think, when you spend your time in books at a young age.
Gotcha.
But no, you'd be surprised. There are some intellectuals out there.
It must be so frustrating for you to listen to this show. I mean, the amount of misinformation and misspeaking that goes on, you just must hate it.
You know what? I love What's Up with Florida. To me, it just reminds me of the world is such a colorful place.
It is indeed. All right. Thank you so much, Melanie, for going easy on us. We appreciate it. Thanks for listening. This must be a tough summer for you, Kevin, because some of the best movies of the year have been documentaries.
Yeah.
So few louds in these movies. But we had the Kurt Cobain Montage of Heck documentary, and then we had the Amy Winehouse documentary right after that. And the summer continues with a new film called I Am Chris Farley that debuts tonight at 9 o'clock on the Spike Channel. We're going to talk to actor and comedian Kevin Farley, who's one of the executive producers on the film, right after we hear this clip.
Funniest guy ever. It was nuts. Nuts.
When I walked through Chicago with him, oh my God, it's Chris Farley. It's Chris Farley. It's Chris Farley.
Success in show business does not always create the best version of people.
You can't walk around being funny all the time. You have to be yourself sometimes, and you have to be alone sometimes.
But you don't die at 33. It doesn't happen.
It comes up in something in my mind every day. And I think it will forever.
You hear from David Spade in the film, also Adam Sandler and Bob Odenkirk and Bob Saget and Dan Aykroyd and Tom Arnold. The list goes on and on. Kevin Farley joins us on the show right now. Hey, Kevin, how are you, man?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
Terrific. Thanks so much for coming on. How many kids in the Farley family, and where are you in order?
Well, we're kind of like Russian dolls. We get smaller as we get younger, and we pop out of a cake. You know, there's four boys and one girl there. And I'm kind of lower half, I guess.
All right.
You know,
how many years apart were you and your brother Chris?
About a year, maybe a year, a month or two.
Wow.
Yeah, almost like Irish twins, I guess they call it. But yeah, we were close.
That must have been such a crazy look. Nobody expects a family member to go off and become internationally famous. That must have been so crazy for your family to the rocket ship ascent that he had in comedy.
Yeah, we were from the Midwest, a small little Madison, Wisconsin. So, we, you know, it was a bit shocking. Nobody knew really how to deal with it in the family. We're just like, oh, boy, he's on TV. And, yeah, it was strange. I remember when he got on SNL, it was strange. We didn't think that would ever happen, that's for sure.
How did he deal with fame?
It was tough, I think, for him. He really enjoyed the stability of SNL, kind of having a job and doing that, and then movies were a little more difficult for him. He liked it. He loved what he did. He loved to be an actor, but he didn't really like the fame part of it as well. He couldn't deal with all the showbiz side of it or the fame, you know.
That's funny. I'm sorry to interrupt. There are a lot of people who think that being famous would be great, but yeah. I think if they were, they wouldn't like it as much.
No, because you can't turn it off. I think Chris wanted to turn off like a light switch, you know, and you want to be able to control it, but you can't really control it. It's always constant. It depends. If you do one movie like Tommy Boy, then, you know, you're pretty much everybody's talking about that, and you just wish you could control it a little bit more, and you can't.
Right, and because of the kinds of characters he played and because of his huge personality and all the laughs, that's what people want from you when they meet you on the street. I mean, I don't think anybody goes up to Daniel Day-Lewis and makes him do his characters, but I bet with a guy like Chris, I bet they want him to be that wacky guy from Tommy Boy.
Say I drink your milkshake.
Yeah. I think it'd be funny to go to Daniel Day-Lewis and go, can you do Lincoln?
Right. That'd be funny. Kevin, why'd you want to make the movie?
I think that Chris has just reached a point of kind of legendary status, and he's still talked about today, and they approached me about a documentary, and I thought it would be a great idea. You know, I just think just because he's one of those guys that people still talk about. They still run Tommy Boy, and they still talk about him. Even the youngsters do that. So I'm appreciative of that, and I thought, well, why don't we make a documentary that is true, because there's been a lot of things said about Chris, and I wanted to make something that was really true and honest about people that knew him and worked with him and loved him.
Now, he passed away in 97, right?
He did, 97, yep.
And I understand in this film, people are still genuinely moved to tears just talking about him. What do you think it is about him that it affected them so deeply?
I think he was just honest, and you saw whatever you saw, you got, you know, and he wore his heart on his sleeve more than anyone I've ever seen in show business. So I think that kind of was endearing to a lot of people when you met him, and that stuck around. And it was, I think that people truly loved him, and they loved working with him. And I think truly people still miss him. The people that worked with him and loved him, they truly miss him still. And it's still stings to this day.
Was this sure. A difficult process to go through to make this movie for you?
Yeah, it was. When it brings back a lot of, I think as time goes on, obviously time heals all wounds, but it doesn't heal everything. But and then this brought up a lot of feelings, I guess, you know, that have been, I guess, sort of muted over the years. So it was difficult to revisit some of that stuff and look at the old footage and that kind of thing, yeah.
Kevin, do you think you wanted to become an actor and a comedian because Chris did that?
Yeah, I mean, I looked up to Chris a lot, and I thought he was very brave in a lot of his things that he did, going down to Second City and pursuing an acting career. I thought was extremely brave, and I went down there and I saw him, and I thought, this is great. I'd love to do this with my life. And so he inspired me a lot to do it, you know.
Is it ever frustrating for you as a guy who's, you know, been doing it for a long time and kind of has your own career and your own life to have so many people bring up Chris to you when they meet you?
No, I don't really mind. I think, you know, I loved him. I miss him. And I think it's great that people still do, even after 17 years. I'm very grateful for that. I think it's amazing when people say, I loved your brother and I liked his work. Because as time goes on, you know, and show business keeps moving along, it's nice that they still remember him. I think it's great.
Well, the movie does look fantastic, and I this Brent Hodge and Derek Murray have made so many other great documentaries in the past with you know, the Bruce Lee and the Evel Knievel one I saw was so good. I can't wait to see this one. So it's on Spike Channel tonight at 9 o'clock. I am Chris Farley, right?
Yeah. It's on iTunes on Tuesday.
Sounds great. Kevin, thanks so much for the time, man. We really enjoyed it.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to The Kevin and Bean Show. It's 8:54.
Allie McKay is even crazier than we knew. We found out something about her last week, Ralph, that you won't believe.
Not possible.
Yeah.
That we're going to talk about coming up right after the top of the hour here on K-Rock. First, though, time for the Showbiz Beat. It is the return of Ralph Garman, back from vacation. How are you, sir?
American Ultra, stay away from me. American Ultra.
I don't think those
Mama,
lyrics.
Let me be.
It's woman.
I think it's woman.
Dude, what? You can't American sing that woman. Unless your penis pops out of your leather pants.
That's right. Well, first of all, my penis has popped out of my leather pants, but that's not important right now. What's important is the movie American Ultra. Have you seen the trailer for this sucker?
Yes.
Are you all in?
I am.
100%, right?
I am. It looks great.
It looks awesome. Why are you laughing, Allie McKay? This is the one film Kevin and I can agree on.
It looks great.
Jesse Eisenberg's just a stoner, works at a convenience store. He's just a big doofus. But what we don't know is he's a highly trained government agent, but he doesn't know it. And then they activate him. They just turn him on. They throw the switch. Ass kicker! It'd be like finding out Kevin is a highly trained government agent.
Whoa.
And they come and say, the cuckoo clock says 9:12, which in military time is 17:02. And then boom! Kevin just snaps out of his trance and becomes a...
Well, we kill all of you.
Becomes a highly owned honed weapon.
Thank you.
And then for the rest of our lives, we would never stop talking about what a tremendous undercover agent he was. Because you guys, we couldn't believe when we found out that he was the real
but
deal.
But this is the magic of this premise, is these agents don't know they're agents. It's all sublimated.
Yeah.
They just go about their business, and they think they're regular people, and then they get activated, and then S is on.
Great cast.
Wow.
Love that Topher Grace.
Topher Grace is in it. Jesse Eisenberg is in it. All right, Kristen Stewart.
Kristen
also
Stewart
in it,
doesn't even look like she can ruin it.
Right.
She looks fine.
She looks like she's awake and participating.
And happy. Almost happy.
And entertaining.
Yes.
I know. For that reason alone, you should see American Ultra. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about it is because we do have passes to give to the premiere of American Ultra, August the 18th at the Ace Hotel. That place is becoming like the place to be, that Ace Hotel. American Ultra is in theaters everywhere on August the 21st. But if you'd like to see it on the 18th, you'd like a pair of passes to the premiere, give us a call now, 1-800-520-1067. Call our own sleeper agent, Beer Mug, right now at that phone number. And if you're one of the first five people to get through at that number, you will get a pair of passes to see American Ultra. Looks good. I'm in.
I could be an agent.
Yeah, you could.
Could.
You might be.
Bjork has canceled the remaining dates of her European tour because she says she realizes she loves music too much to keep performing. No, that's not the reason. She posted on Facebook on Saturday that she's sorry, but she wanted to give some insight to the sudden cancellations to her fans. And she said it was a scheduling conflict beyond their control was the problem. Also, singing this album has been intense, and the internal clock of it is different to the other ones. It has been...
Right.
See, Kevin?
I got to that point, I was like, she's full on crazy.
It has sort of had to behave in its own little way. Both the urgency of the leak and now the sudden closure for reasons beyond my control is characteristic of that. I hope through the years I have earned enough Tor Karma points to get your support for this.
With our fingers we make million holes.
Yeah, F you.
We run and we fall into potholes.
What is she
saying? With holes, I know that.
What does she mean by all of that, Ralph?
Sure did. But she said, don't worry, because she's not touring, she's writing new songs.
Yes!
Oh, good, okay.
Because, and she concludes her statement with this, the best, most I can't even speak, it's hardly even English. The best, most natural pathway to go is to let this beast flow its natural course and start anew.
She's got a point.
She does have
a
point.
On a mission to save the world.
Right.
Save the world?
Ah,
We peek at the sky through tree holes.
We're peeking at the sky through tree holes, you guys. Come on.
Aren't we all?
She's the best.
It's Monday. Top 10 movies at the box office. This is what made money over the weekend. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation still number one for a second week in a row. $29.4 million. Fantastic Four limped into second place with $26.2 million in its debut. The Gift was third, $12 million. Strong numbers for a small little film like that.
Really good.
Why'd you hang up on Joel Edgerton then? If you think you
said that was Beer Mug, and I don't know why he did that.
Totally you.
What?
That movie cost $5 million to make. Ralph already made $12 back this weekend.
Yes, overperforming.
Awesome.
Vacation and Ant-Man were the top five movies of the box office. Then Minions, Ricky and the Flash, Trainwreck, Pixels, and Southpaw. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Roseanne Arquette is 56 years old today. Antonio Banderas is 55. Justin Theroux is 44. Newlywed Justin Theroux. Do you know Justin Theroux and his new bride, Jennifer Aniston, went on their honeymoon to Bora Bora with two other couples?
On their honeymoon?
That's how much Justin Theroux does not want to spend time alone with Jennifer Aniston. He invited people to tag along on the honeymoon.
Hey, does anybody else want to come?
Hey, Jason Bateman, bring your wife. You and Amanda, come on. We have plenty of room at the Bora Bora place we're going to. Angie Harmon of Rizzoli and Isles, 43 years old today. Actress Devon Aoki is 33. And Kylie Jenner. I'm just going to stop talking about her.
She doesn't count as a celebrity for you, Ralph.
No, it's just enough's enough, isn't it? I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
All right. Ralph was out last week, so he missed this conversation. So, yeah. Kevin, you want to bring us up to speed, or should we have Allie do it?
I will.
Uh-huh. All right.
We were talking in the office, and Allie was talking about an early crush that she had.
Mm.
And it's one of those crushes where you like this person so much that then you compare all future guys to this person.
Right, sure. For example, let's go around the horn.
Okay.
For me, I'm trying to think who would be that really sort of rocked my world as a young person that made me sort of my loins come alive. I would have to think it was probably Farrah Fawcett,
mm-hmm.
back in her prime.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a poster of her, and that was really the first time like lady parts caught my attention. I was like, "Wow, give me some of that."
I didn't have anyone like that.
never mind.
Which won't surprise anybody.
He had a robot. I was a robot one time.
The Postmaster General was over my bed.
But Ben Franklin was just the hottest piece of ass.
All right, I can't wait. Allie's first love.
Right.
Who she compares, she said the words compares.
I don't know if I...
I believe you did, Allie. Okay. I believe Kevin is remembering it accurately.
One of the new kids on the block was...
Fozzie Bear.
Yeah!
Was Fozzie Bear. That was her first love, Ralph.
I misunderstand the conversation then. I'm apparently
Allie's first love was Fozzie Bear. And she compared guys after that to Fozzie Bear.
Let me explain. I can because that makes me sound crazy.
Because they weren't made out of felt?
That makes me sound nuts.
That's right.
They didn't have a scarf
and
hat.
Waka waka.
Did you make him say that if they wanted to date you?
Here's the thing. Just watching that as a little girl, it made me understand sensitivity because the guys in the balcony, Statler and Waldorf, like they were so mean to him. And it made me super sensitive to him because all he wanted was to tell jokes and make people laugh and bring joy.
But you went the opposite way in your life. Why?
Why didn't you be more like Fozzie?
Waka waka.
It just, here's the thing. And as I say this, yes, I know it sounds crazy.
Oh, no.
You weren't reading too much into the Muppet Show at all, Allie. No.
It's 100% crazy.
That's what they were shooting for. Some pathos from the balcony with Walter and Stardorf, whoever the F they were.
Yes, Stadler and Waldorf. However, I say this, and I don't know if it will help my cause.
I guarantee it won't.
Kat came in, and she goes, you know what? Then I think Kermit was my first crush.
You know, I really like Kermit. Kermit made me want to eat flies and live in a swamp.
What do we know about Fozzie Bear, though? Like, what were the qualities that you... Like, I can see if you're a little kid and you grow up and you fall in love with a TV character because he's smart, and he's handsome, and he's accomplished.
He's a puppet!
A sex sexual thing. It was just his aura, who he was as a little furry guy.
So who was he as a little furry thing?
He was a sensitive soul that just wanted to make people laugh.
Waka waka.
Right.
He was a bear with a hat and a tie on. It was a scarf.
It was a scarf.
Did you or did you not compare all the guys in your life to Fozzie Bear?
I feel like I maybe then had a savior complex with guys that maybe were comics that weren't really making it, so I would try and save them.
Did you ever ask yourself what would Fozzie do?
What would Fozzie do? I have a bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
W-W-I-D.
You know what Fozzie would do? He would just lay on the ground when somebody took their hand out of his ass. That's what Fozzie would do because he's not real. He's a freaking puppet.
I'm aware that Fozzie is not real. It's the idea of Fozzie.
Was this common for you? Did you have comic strips or cartoons or anything like that that you also identified very deeply with those characters?
Well, I don't want to say Peanuts with yeah, Ralph really? In the room.
That wouldn't surprise me.
I realize, you know, verbalizing it, that it does sound
insane.
It is insane?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. To form an unnatural connection with an inanimate object.
With a puppet.
I believe could be qualified as nuts.
Huh.
Yeah.
I think we need to get
Were there any people you felt connected to as a child?
Sure. Ricky Schroeder.
All right.
Of course.
There you go. Whatever. Silver spoon.
We just came up with the greatest idea ever, you guys.
Sure.
Allie is single, right?
Right.
Doto is single.
Right. Continue.
Perfect for each other.
Match made in heaven.
That's what I'm saying.
He doesn't have email. He doesn't hike. He doesn't listen to the show. All the things that are deal breakers for Allie. That's got to get Doto in here. We got to get these two to meet.
What about the murderer part? She does not like murderers.
He's not a murderer. I'll never murder you. Anyone.
What, convicted? No.
You'll never ever be able to prove that.
But the
anyway,
bag of knives.
Yeah, but there could have been a very reasonable explanation for that bag of knives.
The explanation was that's not.
That's not. That was his defense. I think when it finally went to court, he said, "How do you plead?" It's not.
I don't think it went to court.
Oh, it didn't?
Nope.
Well, it should have.
Look,
no.
I know we've got a lot of great guests coming up this week.
What about the bag of panties?
Well, there was that, too. So excited about Doto joining us. The International Man of Mysteries return on the program Thursday morning right here in K-Rick.
You're
just
adorable.
Got that confirmed.
You're adorable.
What are you talking about?
Bean's adorable.
What?
Why?
Because he's Charlie Brown with
No,
the football.
Doe will come on. If Doe commits, he comes
on.
Yeah. It's just hard to get to nail him down to actually commit. But once we have a time and a day, he comes through.
He is the most difficult guest that we can ever book ever, in the history of the show.
He's effing shaky.
We can get Simon Pegg on three times in a row before we can get Doto once. It's true.
Speaking of guests, I don't know. I guess we can talk about it. Dave talked to me about it. I guess we can talk about it.
What?
Dave, can I talk about that thing we talked about? Dave?
What thing?
The thing about the guest that's coming in that I got excited about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
I'm thrilled. What? I'm like beyond thrilled. I'm pre-nervous.
Uh-oh.
In Bean's parlance. Huh. I'm pre-nervous. I'm nervous about being nervous, how nervous I'm going to be when this guest comes in.
Wow, look at that.
I think I know.
Somebody from Monty Python?
No.
I was trying to think people
no, right
you.
Right country, though. Right country.
British?
Yes.
Okay.
Come on, guys. You know who it is.
Stop saying that.
I feel like that if we knew, we would say it out loud at this point.
Dick Poop.
It's not Dick Poop. I'll give you a hint. Make it show, number one.
Oh, yes,
that's
Mr.
Right.
Stewart.
Patrick Stewart. Yes! Sir Patrick Stewart is coming onto the
show.
That's right, yeah.
That's beyond huge.
Yeah.
When we have had an actor and a star of that caliber actually come into the Kevin and Bean show? Professor X. Jean-Luc Picard.
It's going to be awesome. That's soon, too. Within a couple weeks, right?
It's a week from today.
Yeah.
And great.
He's got a new series in conjunction with Seth MacFarlane called Blunt Talk, which looks awesome.
It's all about smoking weed?
No, it's not about that at all.
Blunt Talk.
Come on.
I like you.
That does not make me feel better.
I want to give everyone a heads up tonight. Something very cool is happening, and I want you to go do this. Go meet a young man that I'm very fond of, called Charles Connor. He is not only our...
He's the best person ever.
He is the best person ever. That's part of it. He's the nicest man you'd ever want to meet. He is our security here at the station here at K-Rock. But before he took on that lame-ass gig, he was one of the architects of rock and roll. He was the drummer for a ton of amazing, iconic rock performers like James Brown, Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson, the original Coasters, Big Joe Turner, and last but not least, Little Richard. Played with him for years. Charles is a one-of-a-kind personality and also one of the great rock and roll drummers of all time.
Dick Poop.
He's not Dick Poop. Here's a little taste of Charles Connor behind the skins playing with Little Richard. That drum intro alone puts him, boom, right there in the pantheon of rock and roll drummers.
It's pretty crazy.
He's written a new book about his life and career called Keep a Knockin', the story of a legendary drummer, Charles Connor. He is having a book signing tonight at Book Soup on Sunset Boulevard, 8818 Sunset to be exact, in West Hollywood. Book Soup at 7 p.m. tonight. Charles will be there with his book, talking to folks and signing copies of his new book. And if you really want to talk to a legend and a great, great guy, Charles will be there tonight. You want to check that out. Just want to give him
that's what I'm talking about, sucker.
That's right. I mentioned that earlier in the show, and Edwin wrote in and said, when you said a famous drummer works at K-Rock, I immediately thought of Beer Mug. When is he signing his book? I can't wait to read stories about his loser friends and the beats he created.
Fantastic.
Edwin makes me laugh.
I, myself, am a drummer.
Right. That's right. But you know Charles Connor, sir.
If you need a drummer on your new album, I could do that.
No, we don't want you to do that. Just answer the phones. It's Monday morning. That means we take a look at the top 10 movies at the box office. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, number one for the second week in a row. $29.4 million is what it made this weekend. Fantastic Four, beaten up by a string of bad reviews for the most part. And people who went to see it don't seem much happier. $26.2 million made it number two at the box office as it underperformed a little hair. The Gift overperformed. Did very well for itself in its debut weekend. $12 million. I don't know if we mentioned this on air offer, but Bean was talking about the fact it's a $5 million film. That's all it cost to make. And it's already made its money back and then some.
It was.
By the way, Joel Edgerton, such a great actor, also wrote the thing and directed it
as well. Yeah.
He's got to be Hollywood's new It Boy right now.
He's got to be.
I'm just saying, being a triple threat like that, that's very impressive.
I think he's your It Boy. Vacation was fourth. Ant-Man was fifth. Ant-Man, number five, don't you know?
Still doing that?
A little shout out to Peyton Reed. Minions was sixth. Ricky and the Flash was seventh. Trainwreck was eighth. Pixels was ninth. And Southpaw came in at number 10. What?
Just noises.
Speaking of Ricky and the Flash, Meryl Streep stars in that film. She, of course, one of our great actresses of all time. Maybe not as great a singer as she is an actress. I don't know. I'm just hazarding a guess here. She does play a rock and roll singer and guitar player in this film, Ricky and the Flash. To her credit, shows you her consummate professionalism as a thespian. She learned how to play guitar for this role.
No kidding.
Yeah. Wow. From scratch.
She should have learned how to sing.
Well, her cover of Bad Romance by Lady Gaga, maybe not all we could have hoped it would be.
Yeah. All right.
I haven't seen the film, Ralph. Is it possible that that clip is from a scene where she's like on drugs and at her lowest point and she's supposed to sound crappy?
It's nice of you, Bean, to try
I'm
to
just
give
asking.
Her an out.
Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe. You're right. Maybe.
And she can't hear the monitors or anything else.
Right. And she's deaf.
Right.
And she had.
And she's never heard the song before.
She gargled with old razor blades before she went on stage. You're right. It could be that scene. That powerful scene from the film.
I haven't seen it. I don't
Nor
know.
Have I. but maybe you're right. Speaking of movies, Henry Cavill. You know him, of course, as the Man of Steel. Mm-hmm. Also as Napoleon Solo in the upcoming Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie, which, by the way,
looks great.
I can't wait to see that film. I'm a huge, huge OG Man from U.N.C.L.E. fan.
I'm not. I don't know what it is, but this looks awesome.
Man from U.N.C.L.E. was a classic 60s spy TV show, Kevin. I know you like Get Smart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It came from that same era when James Bond was just the king of the movie theaters, and a lot of TV shows also tried to replicate the whole spy phenomenon of the 60s. So it was a Cold War spy series, action-adventure series, starring Robert Vaughn as Napoleon Solo and David McCallum as Ilya Kuryakin, his Russian counterpart. And it was very controversial at the time in the 60s, during the height of the Cold War, to have an American and a Russian working side by side. So they're remaking that premise with this new movie, Man from U.N.C.L.E., and Henry Cavill plays Napoleon Solo in it.
But lots of louds in the new movie, it looks like.
Lots of louds. Guy Ritchie, the director, by
I
the
love
way.
Guy
Can't
Ritchie.
Can't go wrong.
Yep.
And Armie Hammer plays Kuryakin. But he, before all that, he was in a series called The Tudors that I loved on Showtime about Henry VIII. Kevin, don't get scared off just because it talks about history stuff. It was very bloody and gory and sexy. It was like Game of Thrones before Game of Thrones. It was filled with gore and sex. So much so that Henry, in a recent interview, talked about the fact that while shooting a sex scene for that series, the unfortunate happened while he was working with a young actress.
Ah.
I often wondered if that was ever the case, and most actors say, no, no, you're not. It's just not like that. We're focusing on
it's
other
not
things.
Sexual.
It's not sex. It's very technical, and it's very, very bland, and it's very clinical and cold.
Well, hot lights, 40 people standing around.
Henry says,
not conducive.
Henry says the opposite. It only happened to me once, he says in an interview with Men's Health magazine. I had a girl had to be on top of me, and she had spectacular breasts. And I hadn't arranged my stuff into a harmless position. It's only the Brits can. She's basically rubbing herself all over me and ...
Oh, no! This is a colossal disaster.
It's a colossal disaster. I had to apologize profusely afterward. It's not great when you're in a professional acting environment and someone gets a boner.
Hey, sorry about that whole boner thing.
Yeah. So, no, it's not acceptable.
Gentlemen, start your boners.
That's right. So, at least he's honest about it. I like that about Superman.
He's not Superman. He's played Superman.
He's pretty super. He's pretty dreamy, I think.
All right. Humming a boner.
I think he's the it boy now.
Meaning, I was just saying, his star has risen in Hollywood as a result of writing and directing a successful hit movie. That's all.
Yeah.
Isn't anything sexy time about it, Ralph?
All right. And while we're talking about movies, this is so Bill Murray. So Bill Murray. Bill Murray, who refused for years and years and years to perform in another Ghostbusters film. Dan Aykroyd got on his hands and knees and brought him cases of Crystal Head vodka and said, please, just join us, won't you, for one last go-around? No, I'm not interested. Over the weekend, Bill apparently snuck into Boston and shot a film for the rebooted all-female Ghostbusters movie.
Is that right?
Yep. The new movie, which, of course, stars Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, and Chris Hemsworth. Bill came by and shot a little scene for the rebooted film, so he will be appearing in the new Ghostbusters. Isn't that just like him?
Yes.
Just to zig when everyone else says zag.
Ali, did you go by when you went to Boston on vacation? Did you go by Ghostbusters? You were talking about maybe visiting.
Fortunately not. No, it wound up being a weird timing thing.
Okay. Plus, Fozzie Bear is not a star.
He's
not
if he was star in it, I would have stopped that set.
Who are you going to call?
Show me your waka.
Waka, waka.
Don't cross the
bitches
streams.
Bitches be crazy.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Rosanna Arquette is 56 years old today. Rosanna.
Don't do it, man.
You know, she was the actual...
In the Toto video.
Yes, but also the
inspiration for the
inspiration
song.
Inspiration for that song, yeah. They wrote it for her.
And the continent of Africa was the actual inspiration for the Africa song, too.
I don't think that's true.
Really?
No.
56 years old today.
What's the point of this story?
Antonio Banderas is 55 years old. Justin Theroux is 44 years old. Just got married to Jennifer Aniston. It was a surprise wedding. A lot of people showed up in jeans and stuff because they thought it was a birthday party.
Love it.
Angie Harmon, Rizzoli and Isles fame, 43 years old today. Actress Devin Aoki is 33. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. We are going to talk about process servers. I don't know if you heard the story earlier today, but Justin Bieber, somebody walked up and said, "Hey, look at this cute little puppy." And he started to pet the puppy and then went, "You're served!"
Boom!
So we're going to take some calls on that tomorrow morning.
Run away.
Also, a Bachelor in Paradise report
mm-hmm.
with Ralph and Petros Papadakis. And tomorrow is Fallout Boy, the interview and the performance in studio starting at 7 a.m. tomorrow morning.